Back at it here in One Bills Drive, John Murphy with Steve Tasker.
Rookie wide receiver free agent Robert Foster out of Alabama is going to join us at 12:30.
1 o'clock, former Bills offensive coordinator Steve Fairchild. He's got some interesting takes on Josh Allen.
Also, Johnny Manziel signed a 2-year deal in the CFL. We're going to hear from his head coach, June Jones, at 1:30.
One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone, touchdown!
That's how we start. That's how we roll here at One Bills Drive. One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, front end of the AdPro Sports Training Center in Orchard Park, right next door to New Era Field. That's where we are now, today, for the next 3 hours. We'll be here again tomorrow. Good afternoon, everybody. John Murphy alongside my broadcast partner, Steve Tasker. Steve, it's the start of a 4-day work week. I love this country. I love America.
What
4-day work week this weekend, next week.
That's right.
Love it.
As Yakov Smirnoff, the comedian, said, what a country.
It is a great – it's going to be a good week, too. There's stuff going on here with OTAs beginning tomorrow, and we'll talk about that a lot as the week goes along. We've got a weekend to recap. But I trust you had a good weekend. You were out of town at a wedding, a friend's daughter's wedding in Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah, we were down in Oxford and Old Miss. It was it was smoking hot. I mean, it was 182 degrees and 115% humidity.
90s?
Yeah, it was in the 90s, and it was, you know, high humidity. It was it was smoking hot, but it was beautiful. Very green down there, obviously, and it was great to see. But the problem was I couldn't watch the horse race on Saturday. The wedding was on Saturday, and we were getting up, and I was, you know, trying to find the race on the TV while we were waiting around. It was 5 o'clock wedding.
And, yeah.
And the only thing that was on was a royal wedding. It was the other wedding. I couldn't find anything else on. Yeah, it was driving me crazy. It was like reruns and recaps and whatever.
I miss that. I did watch the Preakness. I did invest in the Preakness and came up empty. We got a great horse in the Preakness.
You gave all that Kentucky Derby money back.
Still up.
You gave it all back.
No, I didn't. I bet $61 and came up empty, so I'm still up $200 on the Triple Crown races. I'm good. And I'll invest again in a couple weeks, 3 weeks for the Belmont Stakes. This is a super horse, though, and it wasn't a super race, but that horse, Justified Steve, found a way to win. I knew it was going to win.
Sloppy,
terrible track. Again, I knew Justified was going to win, knew going in, so I tried to fashion some bets around that a little bit, came up empty.
None of the other horses came through, huh?
Right, because Justified is a great horse in what I think is an average, maybe slightly below average field of three-year-olds, but Justified is the real deal.
You're coming up on the Belmont,
yeah,
and there's going to be, like, instead of 20 horses like in the Derby, it's going to be like six.
Well, I don't know.
Eight.
I don't know how many. Probably eight.
Yeah. There's nobody running.
It's still a grade one stakes race, lots of money to win. And I will say this about Justify on Saturday. It was a close finish. Justify barely held off, the eight horse at the end. And even was a Good Magic, the number five horse in that race, had a nice strong run. I think there were some chinks in the armor at Justify a little bit on Saturday, which may serve to encourage some other challengers in the Belmont. You know what I mean? Now,
What are they going to do if the Belmont runs in sunny weather, though? Then that horse is going to shift gears, I bet.
It's a great horse. Big horse. Huge, muscular horse.
Right.
You don't see horses look that good very often.
Listen, I saw... it was just a little clip on Twitter where they said, hey, they're walking Justified over to his trailer and going to drive him down to Belmont. And, I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off that animal. Man, he was gorgeous.
Beautiful chestnut
red
color.
Shiny.
Looking. Yep.
And
big muscle.
They walk like they, you know, like they know they're showing off, you know. It was just a great-looking horse. I was like, man, it's awesome.
So you were in Oxford, Mississippi, the home of Ole Miss. You told me Ole Miss wasn't not all that impressive to you.
We didn't drive around the campus too much. Certainly, it's the hills. It was in the hills of Mississippi there, and it's a beautiful little city. We were down in the square, walked around downtown Oxford a little bit, and it's a nice little. But it's quiet.
Yeah,
it's very quiet now. So it was, and all the establishments close at midnight, so I'm like, well, why do you even open up? You know, if you're gonna close at midnight, I mean, what if you go for dinner and go home?
Oxford, Mississippi is northern Mississippi, And it is the nearest big city is Memphis, Tennessee, one of the great cities in America.
That's where we flew in and out of. We spent the whole all day yesterday in Memphis, went to Graceland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Listen, for those of you who don't know Graceland, it's, you know, it's Elvis's home.
Yeah.
It's where, not where he was born, it's where he lived after he struck it rich.
Yeah, he was born in Tupelo.
He
just
bought
down the
place,
road.
Right, bought the place in probably, I don't know what there is, 20 acres there, 15 acres, whatever it is. He bought it for $100,000 in 1957. When he was 22, right?
Yep.
So, and I know a lot of people know more about Elvis than I do, but you go there and it's turned into more than just a tour of the house. I mean, they bought a bunch of property across the road, and they shuttle you as a guest across the road so you can go through the house and all the grounds. But then over on the other side where they bought the property, they've got these huge buildings with all of his – they got his cars, all his stage outfits, dozens of stage outfits, his gold records, platinum records, paraphernalia, film clips, interviews. It's really – and, of course, it's all spun – you know, it's Elvis' estate that does it. So it's – all the good stuff about Elvis and all the how much of an inspiration he was to other artists, all these other guys' quotes, and all these other stage outfits from other performers who, you know, credit Elvis.
Sure.
And rightfully so. It's pretty cool.
Yes.
I got to admit, I'm not like an Elvis guy.
No, me neither.
Man, oh, man, though. It was fun. It was absolutely awesome.
I took our whole family went about 15, 20 years ago. Graceland, and I can't imagine it's changed much. The house, did it surprise you? It's not a big mansion, the house itself.
No. Well, it's 35 years old now that when he was living it. So, you know, there's that. But, yeah, it was and he added on to it. So, but he added on, like, this whole wing. Actually, it was a wing he added on. They had their wedding reception there when he married his wife. But now it's full of, you know, history of the house and his career and his upbringing. And they kind of move all the stuff that is a museum, obviously, and he built a racquetball court. In fact, it's the racquetball court he was playing at that morning before he passed away that afternoon. And
isn't there one,
the horses, everything? Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Isn't there one room that's all like fur?
The jungle room.
Yeah, the jungle room.
Yeah,
I was in there.
And what it was is, I always thought the jungle room was in the basement. It's not. It's the back. It used to be the big back veranda.
Yeah,
and he enclosed it, and he went down. They said a local store went down and bought all this like African stuff and
fur
then
stuff,
right? It's fur. Some of it's fake. It's all fake fur. It's the 70s, you know. So he bought this fake fur, but it's also carved wood and totems and stuff like that. From it's got that real motif. It's got green shag carpet on the floors, which is totally 70s. And he put it on the ceiling too.
Yeah.
And he said because it changed the acoustics of the room, they turned it. That's where he made a bunch of records.
Yeah.
He recorded right in that room, the jungle room.
Yeah.
And you know, they knew, of course, everything is documented, so it's. It's pretty cool.
I was telling you, there is a great documentary, I believe, on HBO that I watched about a month ago. Two parts, Elvis's whole life, fantastic, and a lot of it takes place at Graceland. You should look.
Yeah, he was, and he was really philanthropic, and he had a lot of stuff to him. He was just, at the time, he died at 42.
I know, tragic.
It was tragic.
And the tour, when I was there, ends at his grave, right on the outside.
Yeah,
outside
he
of
and
the,
his parents,
it's kind of
and
sad,
he and his parents, and his. He had a twin brother at birth that didn't make it, and he's buried there as well. And then, he's not, but they have a monument there to him, and his grandmother on his dad's side or his mom's side is there as well.
It's kind of a downer to end it like that, right? At his grave,
yeah.
You celebrate his life and the music and the movies, and then you go to his grave, and it's sad. And you walk away thinking, I better go to Beale Street and have a beer somewhere.
We did. We went straight to Beale Street. Yeah, and that was and Beale Street's great too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a
fantastic.
Nice. It's a little bit like downtown Nashville. It's got that old town feel to it, and it's got a lot of live music, obviously. And
oh yeah,
it's a lot of fun. It was
home of the blues.
It's a great way
it's
to
a great
it's a great
city.
Way to kill a day waiting for a flight.
Memphis is a great city.
Yeah,
you guys
nice.
Played there. You were on the team still, I believe, right? You played in the
Liberty Bowl against the
it was
Titans.
The first year the Oilers moved to Tennessee.
It was the Tennessee Oilers.
Yes.
And Steve McNair's first year as a rookie quarterback, he beat us.
Yep.
That was
quite a trip.
That was the second worst stadium I ever played in as a pro.
It was a dump.
Yeah. It was
but
a
the
dump.
Night before, they had a blues festival on Beale Street that I went before the game. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I liked it so much, I went back like a year or two later with the family.
Yeah, they take great pride in it. And now that it's kind of got that, you know, because of the culture we're in, everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
Now it's got that, they take pride in it.
Yeah.
You know, and also they've spruced it up and kept some of it.
It's a little bit I don't want to say dirty, but it's a little bit rustic Memphis, right? It's a little bit rough, which I kind of like.
Yeah,
it's edgy.
It's a little bit like Bourbon Street at 4 in the morning.
Yeah,
you see somebody's looking for a fire hose, clean it up a little bit sometimes. But it was like 90 degrees in the middle of the day, and so it was, you know. Yeah, but the establishments, all the places there are it's worth going down.
Great
no
city.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're watching on our MSG simulcast, Steve and I are happy to announce that we have adopted a new policy. Every time we wear the same shirt on the show, it's $10 into the kitty. I don't think they are the exact same shirt, but you can't really tell.
No, you can't tell. It doesn't show up on camera. They're not exactly. My logo is kind of a sew-on logo. Murph's is kind of the one that's just like emblazoned on there.
You've got a different equipment.
And my sleeves are a little bit different shade than yours are. But
you've got equipment. I've got the NFL
We look
shield.
All of them, yeah.
It looks pretty. I don't know if that's a good look. Do you think we should do that every day, wear the same? No.
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 No, I feel stupid.
The show is good today, despite the start, the last 10 minutes. Just tuning in, you're thinking, what the heck kind of show is this? No, we're going to talk about the Bills and the NFL. The Bills players, as we speak, are still out on the field inside the AdPro Sports Training Center, wrapping up this, the final day of the off-season conditioning program. They start OTAs tomorrow, which means offense versus defense, Steve. Hope you and I get a chance to watch a little bit of that, because finally it begins to look like football starting tomorrow.
Yeah, they start, getting everybody out there together and running against each other, at least on air. There won't be any contact or anything like that, but it'll be also, right now, you got like assistant coaches out there wearing beanies, so they're designated as where they're aligned, and they just kind of stand out there and walk around, and they move, and the defense checks out of one formation into another kind of thing, and they're just going over checks and balances, or checks and check packages, and they can't run, they don't do anything, they're just, guys are wearing, no socks and stuff out there. It's just a walkthrough. So it's pretty boring, I think. That's pretty tedious for these guys to go out there and do that. But tomorrow that's going to change.
Yeah.
You'll tell. Those guys, the adrenaline will kick in. Now, for the young players, they'll think, I'm going to make the team today, not realizing that like 2 months before training camp even starts.
9 OTA sessions, first one tomorrow. They're like 3 this week, 3 next week, 3 the week after that, and then the mandatory mini camp in mid-June, and then they're done until training camp. So we are moving through the off-season here. Whether or not we acknowledge it, and we had such a late spring that it's almost like, what? OTAs already? What? Mini camp 3 weeks away? Yeah, it's coming. On the show today, good show. We've got Robert Foster coming in here at 12:30, about 18 minutes from now, just off the field from the off-season workout today. Robert Foster is a wide receiver from native of Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area, who an extremely fast wide receiver and good size, 6'2". He's an undrafted rookie free agent for the Bills. This guy can fly, Steve, but he didn't have a whole lot of catches in his tenure at University of Alabama, by the way.
Well, they weren't throwing it all over the yard there, but he ran the third fastest time at the combine, and he does have size and speed when he opens it up. And it'll be interesting to see how he fits in, but if the Bills fans are worried about him having anybody on the roster who can run, well, they do. This guy can. He can really go, and he's a fairly big guy at 6'2". And he's got 3 national championship appearances, and he won 2 of those games. And so, for those of you on MSG that are watching his highlights, he's got a little something after he catches it as well. He can run with it.
Definitely a guy to keep an eye on. I was at a Syracuse alumni function last night. Had to MC the Western New York alumni function, and a good Bills fan there came up to me and said, who's going to play wide receiver? He was literally almost sweating. He was so worried about this. Yeah, he was like in a lather. I said, well, you got Zay Jones, obviously. I said, certainly they need more from Zay Jones. You got Kelvin Benjamin, Rod Streeter, couple of others. Andre Holmes is back. And then I neglected to mention this guy. Robert Foster, I think, has a chance to make this roster, I would think, Steve, if he has a good camp and a good OTAs.
And I think there's no doubt that Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator, who was in Alabama last year for that championship game and was calling the plays, he probably gave him the thumbs up and said, listen, I think the kid can play. I think he's got something to offer us. Particularly if Daboll looked at the Buffalo Bills roster, saw these guys on film, watched them practice a little bit or whatever, getting on the lead up to the draft, and probably said, I think Foster could find a niche here. So he's here for a reason, and there's no doubt Brian Daboll had something to say about his presence here.
Coming up at 1 o'clock today on the show, former Bills assistant coach, offensive coordinator, Steve Fairchild. He had 2 different stints with Buffalo. He was a running backs coach the first go-around on Greg Williams' staff, then came back on Dick Geron's staff as offensive coordinator. But that's not what we're talking to him about. We're talking to him about the Buffalo quarterback, about Josh Allen. He has done an exhaustive review of all the first-round quarterbacks, all the rookie quarterbacks, and he puts Josh Allen right at the front of the pack when he talks about those guys.
And that's going to be interesting to talk to him about. He also, in this last offseason, was a quarterback coach and did some work with Chad Kelly, who's out in Denver trying to make that swing out there. And he was also the offensive coordinator in the Spring League this year for Johnny Manziel's team, who we're going to talk about with June Jones later in the show as well. So a lot to talk about with Steve Fairchild, who's a coach here. He's been 35 years in the National Football League. He was a head coach at Colorado State. In fact, he left the Buffalo Bills to go do that as a head coach. And it'll be fun to talk to him. June Jones, the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And June Jones has got a resume in the NFL that's pretty long and illustrious as well, and college. And we're also going to talk about this week, and starts tomorrow, the league meetings down in Atlanta, where there's a lot on the docket for the National Football League. There's a lot of issues that I think a lot of people find interesting. A lot of times these owners' meetings are snooze fests. I mean, they're like, there's nothing going on. But this one, they're going to talk about how they should handle the anthem protests that have been an issue in the league over the last couple of years. They're going to talk about the new kickoff rules. They totally revamped the kickoff and what they're going to do. They're going to probably rubber stamp those as well. But I think one of the big issues, aside from the anthem protest, is the gambling. They're going to have to come up with a plan, and they've been working on it, no doubt, behind the scenes and very quietly. They've been doing work on how they're going to handle the gambling aspect of the new rules and the Supreme Court lifting the ban on sports betting here in America. The league's going to have a long talk about it. So that's on the docket as well as the Carolina Panthers changing hands. So these for the first time, I'm kind of interested to see what happens in the owners' meetings.
Hey, yeah. We got June Jones at 2 o'clock. Johnny Manziel signed over the weekend with the Hamilton Tiger Cats just up the road. Your son, Luke, plays for the Ticats. This is his fourth, fifth year now with the Ticats?
This will be his sixth.
Sixth year with the Ticats.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him about Manziel's?
Not yet. Just tweeted. I'm kind of letting him go because he's in training camp.
Yeah.
So I'm not, like, blowing his phone up trying to find out what's going on. But we did. He didn't throw. Johnny Manziel didn't throw yesterday. He was kind of standing around watching because it is an act. There is a an acclimation that you got to go through.
Game.
It's a different game. It's a very different game, and it's hard to know what it means until you get up there and line up. They are practicing at McMaster University there in Hamilton, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits in.
First of all, is there a job for him there in Hamilton? You know what the quarterback situation might be there already?
Well, they've got four or five quarterbacks in camp. Jeremiah Mazzoli, who was a quarterback there for them in the last half of last year and actually had a winning record there at the end of the season, he's the starter and the incumbent. Johnny's a guy who they brought in. They didn't know if they were going to get him, obviously. It was up to Manziel if he was going to go up there and actually sign a contract. So they had to go move on without him. And then when he finally did ask and they brought him in, they signed him, but they've got a lot of arms up there, and it'll be interesting to see how fast he acclimates to the Canadian game. Now, there's no question June Jones has a lot of experience in implementing this offense that he has, and it is a different kind of offense, a little bit of a college offense. There's only about eight or so, nine concepts in the offense. All of it is done on the fly, depending on what the defense shows you. And the quarterback and the receivers adjust to the defense, run the different routes and different combinations depending on what the coverage is, and the quarterback has to see it the same way. So there's not much to learn, but there's a whole bunch to see once the ball is snapped.
That's going to be interesting to follow.
Yeah,
and
it will.
Of course, you have a vested interest in there with Luke there, your son.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see him do well. It's fun. I mean, I went to the Grey Cup with him a couple of times. I went once. I missed one as well. But then I got a weekend off finally when they went to Vancouver and played in this Grey Cup out there. It's a fun league. It's a competitive league. There's some really good players up there. I always tell guys in the NFL that ask me, I go, I think there's a lot of defenders up there because the field is so big, you got to have a lot of guys that can tackle in space. So if there's a good defender up there, you want to grab him.
We'll talk with June Jones, Johnny Manziel's new head coach, Hamilton Tiger Cats coach. He's coming up with us today on the show at 2. We do want to talk about the Bills, and you are welcome to join us. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. So OTA start tomorrow. We're just about, 2 months, did we say, away from training
camp? Something like
that. Yep.
Yeah.
Training camp.
We're almost to the point where we can count days.
Yeah. So when they get to camp and, you know, battle start for positions, we want to focus on the offense today because we're talking to a lot of offensive players. What do you think will be the most competitive position battle for the Bills on offense? If you have a thought on that, give us a call. Again, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It's also our Twitter poll, and we've had it up for a little bit at more than an hour. Got about 1,600 votes in on Twitter. What will be the most competitive position battle on the Buffalo Bills offense? Right now, according to the Twitter poll, 57% of you say quarterback. That's kind of out in front, right? Everybody, I figured that would be the leader. But 20% of you think it'll be the battle for jobs on the offensive line. 19% of you say wide receiver. 4% have something else in mind. If you have something else or you just want to talk about it, we got phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It makes sense that quarterback is the most competitive position battle. I might vote for that as well, Steve, although I'm interested in a lot of other positions. Look, I think if you woke me up in the middle of the night and said, who's going to start for the Bills September 9th in Baltimore, I'd probably say McCarron. But I know that there's a chance anyway, that Josh Allen is the opening day starter, too. And I wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have to happen, and I'm with you. And it never ceases to amaze me how fast people chime in on it. But from Gandalf the Pink, three positions up for grabs on the line. Vets and rookies competing will likely go into regular season before deciding on the starting five. I don't know. I think the offensive line is going to be decided before the – I think you'll get they'll start putting the offensive line together probably game two of the preseason. When they go to Cleveland, I think they're going to have their five guys pretty much ironed out. Now, you may see some guys sprinkle in there, and they may switch them around, but I think they'll decide very early in the process. But I do think you're right. I think there's two spots up for grabs, center and left guard. I don't think there's three.
We'd rather have you call because I'd like to know what Gandalf – is he looking at right tackle? Jordan Mills going to face a challenge? That's a possibility, I would guess. You could be talking about that. You know, I was thinking over the weekend, because I do think about the Bills on the weekends when we're not here. We always talk about potential replacements for Eric Wood and Richie Incognito. We usually settle on Russell Bodine and on Ryan Groy. You know who we neglect? John Miller. There's a chance John Miller comes back here this year. And he lingered on the roster all last year, didn't play much at all. He was inactive most of the season. But maybe this offense and maybe what Brian Daboll has in mind fits John Miller's skill set better. You know, was he in the doghouse last year? I don't know. He just didn't play much. He didn't seem to fit what they were looking for.
Vlad Dukas came in and played quite a bit at right guard, and that was and it was Dukas was familiar with the offensive line and the schemes they were going to introduce here, and I think he had a leg up that way. And they were switching in and out for a while, but you're right. I mean, Vlad Dukas kind of stayed there, but they did switch those guys in and out at right guard. So maybe that's one of the positions he's talking about as well.
Yeah, maybe. Give us a call if you want to, Gandalf the Pink, and we'll talk about it. From Brian Cook from the Tweet Sheet. He's got his eye on wide receivers as a competitive battle. He says, other than Benjamin, I don't see any locks at wide receiver except maybe Zay Jones. The rest of the receivers are a bit specialized for certain situations. Meanwhile, I expect McCarron to win the quarterback battle relatively easily this year. 2019 is when the quarterback battle will heat up. Well, maybe. I do think there's a chance Josh Allen could vie for some playing time, maybe vie for the starting job at quarterback.
Listen, if that happens, if they have the luxury of waiting till 2019 to put Josh Allen in there or, you know, say he's going to get a chance to play now, that'll be great because it'll mean A.J. McCarron is playing well. Because as soon as A.J. McCarron throws an interception in a game, there's going to be voices that are going to be hollering for Josh Allen to get on the field. They won't tolerate any missteps by whoever's playing there unless it's Josh Allen. They say, okay, he's a rookie. He can make mistakes. A.J. McCarron doesn't get that luxury as a veteran quarterback. People are going to expect him to play well. And if he does play well and is able to keep Josh Allen on the bench, I think the fans are going to be really happy with that scenario. Like Brian Cook says, I mean, I'll be ready to wait till 2019 to watch Josh Allen play. I wonder if everybody feels that way.
Well, I'd be willing to go that way if you told me that the Bills were going to be successful. I don't want to wait if you know they're moping their way into a 2 or 4 win season, and you know what I mean. Then I don't want to watch AJ McCarron if it's going to be a bad season. But it, you know, if he's playing well, as you said, I think I'm agreeing with you. If he's playing well and they're winning. I'm good with that. But I just think there's a possibility here. Don't take your eye off Josh Allen as a potential starter. I would not. I like this next entry from the tweet sheet, Believe 88. I did not pick quarterback because Allen should sit and learn. AJ should be able to take the number one spot. We need a wide receiver to step up and show he's earned a spot as number two and three receiver, assuming Kelvin Benjamin locks in at number one. On the quarterbacks first, I'm not going into this thinking Josh Allen should sit and learn. If it works out that way and they're playing well, I'm all right with that. But I don't go into the season thinking we need to sit Josh Allen for the year, Steve. I really don't.
No, you don't have to. Here's the thing. The only thing you have to do if you're the coaching staff, Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll, is put the guy out there that gives you the best chance to win. The problem is if Josh Allen goes out there and all of a sudden he struggles or whatever, then what are you going to go put A.J. McCarron in? Then how do you go back to Josh Allen? I mean, what you know, when you start that way, then the dynamic gets messed up. And because you're sitting one and playing the other and then sitting the second one and playing the first one in there again, you can't – you know, that is something you want to stay away from. And I think all of us have the mindset that once you make a choice, you – live with that choice until you can't live with that choice anymore. But then you make the other choice, and then you got to stay with it no matter what. So the order in which you begin, I mean, says something about how far you can go down the road.
The receiver battle, though, and the last two tweets on this have been interesting with Brian Cook talking about the rest of the receivers are specialized, and Believe 88 saying we need a wide receiver to step up. So Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes played a lot last year. You'd like to, I think, get better. They'd like to get better, I would think. Brandon Riley, we had him here on the show last week going into his second year. Had a really good camp last year. Jeremy Curley comes in with some experience. Rod Streeter had a pretty outstanding camp last year before he got hurt. A couple of rookies, Austin Prohl, Ray McLeod. And then another rookie who's going to be on the show with us momentarily here, Robert Foster, the undrafted free agent from Alabama. There are a couple of others, but I think you're right when you look at who's going to be number three of this group. And it almost comes down to what do they want from the third guy? You know, are we talking about the slot receiver? What do you want? Do you
want is the number two guy the slot receiver, or is the number two guy the X on the outside? I mean, that's.
Do we concede number two to Zay Jones? Not concede, but I think he's probably got a jump on this.
That's where it begins,
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. I think it's going to be interesting to see where that all shakes out. How many three wide? How often are they going to go three wide? How often are they going to go two wide? How often are they going to go four wide? I mean, you know, it all comes down to personnel and how they can put them on the field. I like this is another good tweet from Jay Garbs. Interesting QB, but competitive. It's O-line. I think McCarron gets to start, and Allen wins out eventually, and we never look back. But it won't be competitive, just eventual. There's so much to play for on the O-line, and a lot of relatively unknown factors. Yeah, I think the O-line there is a little bit of unknown because we saw some problems last year when they tried to change the philosophical way that the offensive line came off the ball and blocked. It was a different style of run blocking than they had in the past where they'd been so successful, and they didn't take to it, and they had to flip back and go the other way after the bye week. So I think that we do have to find out how Brian Daboll is going to use this offensive line, what they're going to be asked to do, and how Juan Castillo, you know, implements those techniques. It's going to be interesting to see which of those guys has the skill set and maybe could become a starter, if only for that reason, because of the style of offense they're going to play.
There's a lot that could happen. We want to know from you, what's the most competitive position in the Bills' offense as they approach training camp a couple of months away? Give us a call. We'll talk about it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Might be wide receiver, and if so, might be a chance for our next guest. He's an undrafted rookie free agent from Alabama, native of the Pittsburgh area, Robert Foster, standing by to join us in studio when we come back. Come on back for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker joining us in studio just off the field from the offseason conditioning program. Happy to have rookie wide receiver Robert Foster from Alabama. You just lowered your chair. You're 6'2". Now you look like you're the shortest one here. Come on, Robert.
Yeah, man, I just like to sit comfortable, comfortable.
I like the way you do that. It makes me feel larger.
Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it. You've been here now, man.
Thank you.
A couple of weeks. How's it gone for you so far?
It's going good, man. You know, just embracing everything, you know, sinking everything in and taking advantage of everything I possibly can.
You came in. You're familiar with Brian Daboll.
Yeah, for sure.
Did it mean something to you that he said, you know what, I like, I want him on our team? That's kind of. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's the professional way. You know what I mean? I'm trying to take advantage of everything. I'm not going to dwell on the past. If college is college, you know, I'm not going to go back on tour in that term. And, you know, we had a relationship, so, you know, I'm willing to take advantage of it, you know?
We asked you, Robert, when we were talking during the commercial break, why Alabama? Now, clearly it's, you know, the premier program in the country, but you grew up just outside Pittsburgh a little bit, and you made a choice between either going to Alabama or staying close to home, huh?
Yeah, I mean, because I really wanted to be the best player I could possibly be. Not saying that I couldn't do that at Pitt, you know. I love Pitt University, but, you know, I had a choice, you know, and I choose Alabama because, you know, I wanted to compete as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were there, and you were in three national championship games, and you won two of them.
Yeah, yeah.
That might not have happened if you were going to Pitt.
Yeah,
that's not to knock
him
down. Right?
Yeah, nothing, that's part of it. Nothing to knock him down. You know, I just, again, I did it for the best of me.
Right.
You know, yeah.
They do have a reputation in Alabama for coaching you up pretty
for
hard.
Sure,
I mean,
for sure, yeah.
They don't pull punches, and they don't baby you through it
no
and hold
way.
Your hand through it. They expect you to stand up and do it yourself.
Yeah, they
right?
prepare you. You know, they prepare you for the next level and taking advantage of it. Yeah, for sure.
Robert, does Coach Saban talk about that? Like, I'm going to get you ready if you're good enough to play professionally?
No, he doesn't really talk about it. You know, Coach Saban promised me three things. You know, he said I was going to have an opportunity to play for a national championship. You know, win a national championship, and also, you know, also have an opportunity to get my degree, which I did. So, I mean, I took that and sinked it in because he promised me that, and he was a man of his word, and I accepted it.
What's your degree?
Health communications.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Nice. So, talk to you. We were talking too that you were, you know, you kind of hang. You don't know. You came up here to Buffalo. You don't know anybody in Buffalo
nothing,
at all.
Nothing.
It's just, you know, you kind of. So the other day, you guys all the rookies,
yeah, we
kind of pooled your pocket money, and
sure.
We're grilling out behind.
Yeah,
the hotel.
We all just pitched in like $20, and you know, and I, you know, just to have a better relationship with each other, you
right,
know,
right.
To the time that we have, and I decided to just grill, you know, make some burgers and make a little bit of sausage and chips and drink, and we just chilled in the back of the hotel and just vibed.
Yeah, it's great weather for that.
For
now,
sure,
right?
For sure, yeah. For right now.
You got 10 minutes of good weather.
Yeah,
you take advantage of it. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, why Buffalo when you go undrafted? Did you think you'd go undrafted, number one and number two?
Didn't matter to me, to be honest with you. At the end of the day, you get drafted like Coach Daboll said. You know, all the coaches basically say, you know, regardless of what round you get drafted, you still got a clean slate. And I'm taking advantage of it. You know what I mean? I just wanted to make an impact on somebody's team, you know.
Any carryover? Got to be some from the offensive terminology, that kind of thing. I mean, you say you're pulling that from the vets.
Yeah.
But you might be more of a veteran in this offense than anybody else.
I mean, there's a little bit, but it's like I said, I don't want to dwell on the past, but there's a little bit of, you know, some stuff that's in the mix of Alabama, but not really. I'm still learning just as well as everybody else is learning.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the combine and running so well at the combine.
Yeah, I mean, that was another opportunity to showcase my ability. So I try to take advantage of it. You know, a lot of teams look at me as a vertical threat, you know, being able to, you know, moving in and out of breaks and yak. So that's what I really took advantage of, you know, just showcasing my ability and running. And I had a great time at the
4.41?
Yeah, 4.41.
Third best at the combine.
Yes, yes, sir.
You must have felt like job done when you left the combine.
I mean,
right?
You know, I was just trying to compete. You know what I mean? Like, nothing against the receivers. I just felt like I was just in the same predicament as them, and I tried to showcase it as much as I possibly can.
Tell us about the atmosphere there. Was you know, because you kind of parachute into Indianapolis. You don't know who it's going to. Then you're in the middle of the same guys you played against and with and seen on TV. You know that. So what was the vibe like in the group?
It was definitely a blessing. You know what I mean? It was one blessing. You know, just meeting all them. Great players, you know, just competing against them, you know, and this is legendary, you know, this will always be remembered. So it was definitely a blessing for me, you know, and just being around it, you know what I mean, being around the surroundings of all those great players and then just embracing it all.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely fun.
With Robert Foster, Bills rookie wide receiver, undrafted free agent from Alabama. Last year at Alabama, your senior year, you caught just 14 passes, but I want to talk about one of them, a 52-yard touchdown catch against Colorado State. Tell me about that play.
We had a 9-yard, you know, coach called a NASCAR, and we were just running it, and he just, you know, Jalen Hurts was looking at me on the side, and we just made a good connection, and I did everything else after that, you know, tried to make a play for the team, and it blew up on social media, and then, I mean, it just took advantage of everything.
You said when you went to Alabama, Saban promise you some things. Did anybody promise you anything when you got to Buffalo? What'd they tell you when you signed your contract?
No, I mean, no promises.
What's the vibe? What'd they say?
It was just come here and compete, basically. You know, I don't want promises. You know, I don't want promises. You don't owe me anything. My thing is to work for it at the end of the day. And I'm happy to be in a part of Bills Mafia. And hopefully I can be able to showcase my ability and make an impact on the team. They didn't promise me anything. I just want to be able to compete and go out there and make Bills Mafia what it needs to be on top again.
Robert, when you go to Alabama, you probably know that they're not a team that's going to fill the air with footballs, right? They're not going to throw it that much.
Yeah.
And plus, you're playing alongside a guy, Ridley, who really might have been the number one target, I would think, in the past.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, Kyle Benjamin is a great, great receiver. You know, I mean, I'm learning from him. I'm seeing how he's so strong. He's really a tall, great route runner. You know, I'm trying to learn things that I lack at, you know, which is being stronger, you know, taking advantage of certain size of corners and everything. So I'm trying to just sink as much as I possibly can.
So you come into a locker room like in the NFL, it's a little different than it is at Alabama. But for one thing, you got like 200 guys at Alabama. You got now, even with this, you got 90. I mean, yeah. You see it's cut down. You won't, if you do make the team, you won't believe the first day of stretch when you go out there and there's like nobody out there. Except,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but you walk in and there, you're not, with some of the guys are your age, and some of them are 30 years old, 35 yeah. years old. Tell yeah. me about what that's like walking in, and what's the vibe like in the locker room?
The vibe, that vibe is basically, you know, I'm really trying to just build a connection with the vets. You know what I mean? I am kind of older. I'm 24 years old, so mm-hmm. I'm just trying to build a relationship with them. You know what I mean? Try to just build, go by the Bills standard, you know what I mean? Go to the one to the, it's called something called 111, you know, everybody do their job, and I'm just trying to go by that, you know what I mean? Trying to take advantage of that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? The vet's going to do, lead us in the right direction, and that's what I'm planning to do, just follow their direction. They're going to lead me in the right ways.
Yeah. What do you think about the start of OTAs tomorrow? Do you think the atmosphere will change a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I mean, we're all just going to go out there and compete, take advantage of everything, and just have fun at the end of the day. We're definitely going to have fun.
Yeah. Robert, good luck to you. Thanks for coming by here
Thank
today.
You.
Appreciate
Thank
good
you.
Good luck.
Got meetings to go to right at the
yep.
end of this?
Sure, yeah.
All right, we'll let you go. Thanks, Robert. Robert
Thank
Foster,
you.
Bills rookie wide receiver.
Appreciate
Steve
you.
And I back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live. We are at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker on a nice Monday afternoon in Orchard Park, New York. Again, our thanks to Robert Foster for joining us. Steve, we're just talking during the break. He probably represents the biggest speed threat, deep threat, among the Buffalo Bills wide receivers, I would think.
Yeah.
Right? We're looking at some of the 40 times.
Yeah, I mean, Zay Jones ran a 4.45. This and Robert Foster ran a 4.41, which is, you know, what, half a step
yeah.
in a 40-yard dash, and maybe not even. So it's they've got some wheels out there, which is, I think, surprising to a lot of people. I think one of the things that people would question is, you know, why didn't Robert Foster, a guy like when you see him on the film, I mean, the guy's got some abilities. You wonder why didn't he get drafted. He only had 14 catches last year. And, you know, and he's on the same team, and an Alabama team as
Ridley.
Yeah, Kevin Ridley. So those – you know, it's hard to get noticed.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, you know, and he said he had, what, interest in Pitt and Alabama. Obviously, you go to Alabama to win, and he said it.
He wanted to be as good as he could be. And
yes.
That's, and
how are you going to catch balls at Alabama the way they play offense?
But, you know, Murph, I'll tell you this. You really can't question the kids, you know, why you would go there, because you go to Alabama, you know you're going to play a lot of big football games. You're going to get it's a great platform,
yeah,
and they're going to coach you hard. They have a reputation for getting the most out of their players and preparing them, and he said it, and that's what he wanted. And even now, he says, I want to be as good a football player as I can be. And to me, that's critical. You don't want guys who say, I want to play in the NFL, or I want to catch 30 balls, or I want to catch 50 balls, or I want to play in the league 10 years or whatever. You just want to be as good as you can be. And that's because there's no ceiling. You know, you never reach that goal, and you'll always, always, always have something to work for or work on. And that's where you want the mentality of your players at, is somebody who's never done getting better.
Well, it was an interesting conversation with Robert Foster, and we wish him well. And I do think he's in the conversation for a spot on the roster based on his speed and what he might present to the wide receiver battle. It's a battle at wide receiver.
Absolutely. I think it's a great move for him to come here to Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at this receiving core, and this is a place where people think, you know what, I could make that team.
Yeah.
You know, and here in Buffalo, we acknowledge it even in our Twitter poll as being a really up in the air position battle. And that's at the top. You know, most of the teams will have the top two guys or three guys there, and everybody else is kind of a throwaway. You got Kelvin Benjamin. And Zay Jones played last year, but he did not play well. I mean, he struggled his rookie season on a team that didn't throw the football well. Maybe if you get it and change the guy that's pulling the trigger, maybe Zay Jones, you know, emerges, but we still have to see that.
Yep.
And so you got to think, though, coming in here as a free agent or a draft pick, that this is a team that you got a chance to make.
There'll be a battle at wide receiver. We believe that. What'll be the most competitive position on offense for the Bills? That's our Twitter poll today. We got about 1,900 votes in. 56% of you say it'll be quarterback. 20% say it'll be offensive line. 19% say it'll be wide receiver. 4% have something else in mind. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Jay on the line from Cheektowaga. Jay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I think one of the big things that a lot of people are actually sleeping on, I think quarterback is going to be the biggest position battle. I don't necessarily see it being Josh Allen and A.J. McCarron. I actually look at it more as A.J. McCarron and Nate Peterman. I think a lot of people are sleeping on him. They forget that, you know, he was our coaching staff's choice last year. They believed in him. And I just think that a lot of people are not giving him enough credit or, you know, that I think he's going to very much surprise people this year. Yeah. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, okay. It's interesting, Jay, and thanks for the call. You're right, and I'm not done with Nathan Peterman either. Some people, when he had the outing against the L.A. Chargers that he had last year, they were done with him. They wanted him traded, cut, released, suspended, somehow, some way, get him off our team. I don't ever want to see him again. And they're still in that mind frame. Football coaches can't afford to do that. With their players. I mean, and you make a good point about, hey, Nathan Peterman was a guy that this coaching staff picked. He's their guy. He came out, and they're the ones who drafted him. They're the ones who gave him the opportunity. They're the ones who gave him the backup role behind Tyrod Taylor. But you got to remember, too, this is the same coaching staff that picked Josh Allen and A.J. McCarron,
sure,
as well.
Yeah.
So they're all in it together now. And I think – but I agree with you. And when you started out, when the caller said, don't sleep on Nathan Peterman because it might be between A.J. and Peterman, it may be between A.J. and Peterman for the backup role. If Josh Allen were to win the number one spot, do you keep A.J. McCarron or do you keep Nathan Peterman if he plays better – in the preseason, if he comes up and this new offense speaks to him and that kind of thing. I mean, Josh Allen, we know, is not going anywhere. But whether he starts or plays or where he is in the backup and in the pecking order might tell us something.
Yeah, I'm not giving up on Nathan Peterman either. And for all the reasons Steve said, they did draft him a year ago, and Jay, the caller, said that as well. But I do think this, when you put him side by side this week and in July and August at training camp, when you put Josh Allen side-by-side with Nathan Peterman, one of those guys is going to be a standout because of his arm and his arm talent,
sure,
and his arm strength, and that is Josh Allen. Now, I can't tell you what it would look like Peterman versus McCarron. McCarron has more, you know, playing experience, marginally more, a couple of more games. Peterman's two NFL starts were both problematical, you know, the horrendous first half at the Chargers, and then the snow game against the Colts when it was stupid to look at quarterback play. It just didn't mean anything. So if you're going to compare him to Josh Allen, Peterman's going to come up short when it comes to arm talent, strength, and overall arm talent and athleticism, quite frankly. I don't know what it'll look like, Peterman versus McCarron. That's the kind of stuff we're going to find out starting this week in OTAs.
And people are already on that. We got a tweet from Lucky Strikes and Beer. I think Allen will show you very early he has more than what it takes. There's a reason he was chosen, and by the way, great choice. So there's some people out there who obviously think Josh Allen is going to come in here and be everything you ever hoped he was from day one. I'm not that optimistic,
But I don't think there's any question when he gets out there and starts slinging it, people in training camp are going to go, hey, wow.
Yeah.
You know, because he's got that kind of physical talent.
I was here a couple of Saturdays ago for the rookie mini camp, and he starts spinning the ball, and you're like, just as you said, wow, look at that. I mean, it's a rare talent he has, rare arm talent. I don't think McCarron has it. I don't think Peterman has it.
Yeah, and this goes down to the Twitter poll we're talking about, which is what will be the most competitive position battle for the Buffalo Bills offense. And wide receiver is on there along with offensive line and quarterback. And obviously all three of those position battles are on the offensive side of the football. But from Minicamp Jack, he says, I think it's wide receiver. The Bills are not loaded with names, but they have a lot of guys battling to prove themselves. I think Benjamin is number one if he's healthy. Then the rest will fight for spots. Don't rule out Riley or Prohl pushing for playing time in camp and pushing Zay, Curley, and Holmes for spots. Yeah, you see, and even in that tweet from Minicamp Jack, there's a ton of names.
Yeah.
And they all feel like this is a team they're going to make, all the way from Brandon Riley to Austin Prohl to Ray McLeod, Zay Jones,
Jeremy Curley,
Andre Holmes.
It is competitive. It might be the most competitive just because there's so many,
yeah,
other than three quarterbacks. But to me, it's also a little bit scary. You know the old saying, if you don't know who your quarterback is, you don't have a quarterback?
Right.
If we don't know who the receivers are, then really what are we talking about? And they're all, most of them are untested. You know, Curley has a little bit of NFL experience in his background. Zay Jones has 1 year, not a great year.
Right.
Benjamin, obviously, we know who he is, but the rest of them are untested.
Here's the caution, because we've all seen players emerge from no – Wes Welker. You know, go back in time. He was just a guy, you know, he's flopping around. He was with San Diego. He got cut. He went to Dolphins, and they traded him to New England. All of a sudden, he defines a position for his generation. We've seen that happen. We've seen guys come out and emerge, and he's all of a sudden, it's like, wow. Like Mohamed Sanu, not too many people knew about him when he came out, and all of a sudden, he's with Cincinnati and emerges with A.J. Green. Then he goes to Atlanta. He's playing really well, so he's having a good career. So we've seen guys like that who kind of blossom once they get in the NFL. You find out who they are after they get here. Well, and that's all well and good. It could be these guys here on the Buffalo Bills, but you think all of them, you know, three of them are going to be like that? You know, three guys are going to be like great pro players when they were okay in college? You know, is it going to be like, well, you know, it'd be great if we just had one. You know, one of these guys we don't like, Robert Foster or Austin Prohl or Ray McLeod, any of those guys that we don't know about yet, you need just one of them to be one of those guys that finds a niche and says, wow, this guy, how did everybody miss on him? Or this is the guy that really has a skill set that we can exploit in the NFL. To say that you're going to have three of those guys on this roster in this training camp, you know, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
But one might be nice.
Hey,
right?
Yeah, it'd be nice. These are questions to be answered. I'm leaning towards receiver now. Yes, quarterback is the number one, you know, focal point.
It's important.
But
it's important.
Competitiveness, competitive position battle, it might be receiver. We'll get back to this. We'll take more phone calls.
I agree. Because think about it. I mean, some of these guys are going to play that we're talking about. We don't know who it is yet. We don't know if Zay Jones is going to come back and claim the number two and be that guy. We don't know that. Jeremy Curley might do that. Austin Prohl or Ray McLeod or Robert Foster may be the number two for all we know. We just don't know. And that's, I think, because there's so many hats in the ring, we don't know who's going to come up and emerge and be that guy. The more I talk about it, the more I'm saying, the more I'm thinking it's going to be. It's a real roll of the dice if you're going to try and pick a name out of that hat.
Hey, Steve, our buddy Peter King is making a big career move. Longtime reporter at Sports Illustrated, mmqb.si.com. We've talked to him several times on this show. I've known him for 30 years. You've known him for a long time.
Yeah.
He wrote his final column, his final Monday morning column, MMQB piece today, published it today on MMQB. And in that column, I showed it to you. I read it this morning. He pays special tribute to Steve Tasker, longtime Bills special teams ace, member of the Bills Wall of Fame. Just one line from Peter King in his final column. Thank you, Steve Tasker, the most decent, great player I have covered. It's one sentence.
That's kind of nice.
It's really nice. It's really nice thing to say. You got to feel good about that.
I got a lot of respect for Peter, and I would count him as a more than just a –
well, now I guess he's a colleague now that I'm in the media, have been for so many years. But I have, like so many people, read his Monday Morning Quarterback column like you have. I mean, it's required reading for anybody in our business that covers the NFL. You really have to, because he does get some access that nobody else will get, because he is trusted, he is known so well, and people know him for the kind of guy he is. He's a trustworthy, down-to-earth guy who has good common sense and would never betray a confidence. And you read it, you get it in some of the stories he related in his last column about, you know, some of the things that happened with him, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, all these guys that he's covered over his 29 years, and you get a sense as to why guys speak to him more openly and freely than they do other guys.
You know what I've always thought about Peter, and this goes back decades, he's a great writer and a great reporter. He's a great listener. He listens to you. You probably had that experience.
That's right.
You tell him something, and he listens. A lot of reporters have an agenda, have questions. They're looking for your answers to fit their agenda.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Peter King. I've witnessed him work. I've watched him do this. Listen to people deeply and intently in order to get to the truth, to the bottom of it. I think that's an underrated quality.
It's fun, particularly because I like him. And when you read his stuff, you get to know him. And he is like he writes. I mean, he's the same person. And so you learn so much from him. You know, when you read, and you learn a lot about him, but by the same token, it's just, you know, in a world that we live in where there's so many things in 160 characters, he still writes a column that's 3,000 words.
Love
you know,
it.
And you can find some things out in that, you know, when he asks questions that you want to know the answer to, that's the most satisfying thing about reading. When he talks to people and he writes, certain things come up that you want the answers to, and he asks that question next, and he answers it. So it's really comforting to read his stuff, I guess, is what I say.
What do you think when he calls you the most decent great player? I think it's great to be referred to as decent. But it's not called you the most spectacular.
The most decent great player, or would I want to be the greatest decent player? I don't know.
Yeah, you'd probably rather be a decent great player. What's he saying? Most great players are not decent?
I don't know. I don't know what decent means.
Let's dive into this.
It's flattering. I mean, I like him.
You're a decent guy. You're not great.
He didn't say
you were great.
Listen, we don't. You know, he doesn't call me and check up on. But whenever he needs something, he knows he can call me for anything.
That's decent.
But I don't know. I appreciated the shout out because listen, this is an article where Frank Reich and Doug Peterson and Peyton Manning and Brett Favre are all put. So if I'm in that article, even though it is like 6,000 words,
I'm one of
50,000 people in it.
That's great. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. I don't know if it's a congratulatory
decent
level, but
I love that.
It's nice. I do consider him a friend, although, you know, it's a colleague now.
It's pretty neat.
I wish him the best. I like everybody does. Everybody's, you know, for a generation of people growing up, the Monday Morning Quarterback was gospel.
Yeah. I mean,
you had to read it and you believed every word of it.
He's not retiring either. 29 years with Sports Illustrated, moving on to, where's he going? I don't even know. But he's moving on to do more.
I think he's going to Fox, isn't he?
I don't know.
NBC, oh, NBC. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's NBC. Right, NBC.
He'll be on NBC.
One of us broadcast pukes like me.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Steve Fairchild, former Bills assistant coach, offensive coordinator, got some interesting thoughts on Josh Allen. He'll join us coming up next. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Bills back at work today here at One Bills Drive. Final day of the off-season conditioning program. Tomorrow, it's OTAs, Organized Team Activity, day one. That is the third phase of the off-season workouts. And finally, the practices can include some teamwork, offense versus defense, 7-on-7, 9-on-7, 11-on-11, no contact allowed. Bills with 3 OTA sessions this week, a total of 9 overall in the next 3 weeks. Attendance still voluntary. 3-day mandatory minicamp follows the OTAs. Quarterback Tom Brady not at the opening of the Patriots organized team activity today. Again, a voluntary workout. Brady had been a regular participant in the past. He's 40 years old. He has committed to playing in 2018, but he is not at the Patriots OTAs. Pro Bowl defensive tackle Aaron Donald has informed the Rams that he will not be attending their organized team activities that start today. He's looking for a new contract attendance for that OTA obviously is final. Nashville is voluntary, rather. Nashville, Tennessee, expected to be named host of the 2019 NFL Draft at this week's owners' meetings in Atlanta, according to league sources. The other cities considered as potential host sites for the next 2 years include Las Vegas, Denver, Kansas City, and Cleveland and Canton, Ohio. The NFL ready to name that this week in their meetings in Atlanta. Johnny Manziel spent yesterday's first day on the field with the Hamilton Tiger Cats training camp as an observer. The 2012 Heisman Trophy winner watched a lot of the session the day after he signed with the CFL club. Manziel has a lot to learn about Canadian football. The Las Vegas Golden Knights advanced to the Stanley Cup Finals. They beat the Winnipeg Jets 2-1 on the road last night to win that series 4-1. They lost the first game of the Western Conference Finals and then won 4 in a row. Meantime, tonight it's Tampa Bay at Washington, Game 6 of their series. Lightning lead that series 3-2. They can wrap it up tonight at home. That's a or and on the road, rather. That's an 8 o'clock faceoff. And NBA playoffs tonight, it is Boston and Cleveland in Game 4 of their series. 8:30 tip-off tonight. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who spent some time here at One Bills Drive, former Bills offensive coordinator for a couple of years, 06 and 07. Before that, he was part of the Bills staff as a running backs coach. He was also a former head coach at Colorado State, 35 years coaching experience between college and the NFL. Happy to have Steve Fairchild, Coach Steve Fairchild, on the line with us. Coach, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Coach, we appreciate you coming on. And we had the reason we wanted to have you on is you think back, not only to your time here in Buffalo, but also that you've spent, you're a 35-year coach. You've got a lot of football experience. You wrote what is a draft Bible on this year's quarterbacks. And, of course, the Buffalo Bills took Josh Allen. We want to get your take on this quarterback class, what you might foresee in the near future for these guys, and particularly Josh Allen.
Well, I've had a chance to work with Josh before, and I just think he is an elite talent. I don't think you have guys coming out every year that can, do the things he can do that will translate into being an NFL quarterback. I just, when I watched him play and had a chance to go back and review his tape, he was the number one quarterback in my mind coming out, and I just think it was a steal for the Buffalo Bills to get him where they did.
Why do you think he went as the third quarterback in the draft? What did other teams not see that you saw, Coach?
Well, I think when you get into any NFL draft room and in the offseason and you start stacking a board, I think you'll come to a consensus a lot easier on other positions. I think if you put a bunch of people in the room and try to decide who the best left tackle is, you'll get a much easier consensus, a much more consistent rating. I think for whatever reason, people at every level view quarterbacks a lot differently. And some guys want to see size, some guys want to see arm strength. There's just a whole array of ways to look at quarterbacks. But I think at the end of the day, when you look at what translates from college into the NFL, you have to be able to operate and be effective in a pocket. And that means you got to have some size, and you got to be able to play with people around you. And I think that of all the guys coming out, and this was a very good class. I thought Rosen and Darnold were exceptional as well. But of all the guys, I think Josh Allen really has that skill set that's going to translate into the NFL.
So much was said in coming out when he came out about his 56% completion rate. And we talked to friends of ours and colleagues and guys in the media. In one particular way, I remember my buddy Phil Sims said that, one of the reasons he had a 56% completion percentage was because of the offense he ran in and some of the players around him, and he never got any easy completions. Did you watch a lot of college film? And I know you worked with him. What did you see about his accuracy and some of the concerns regarding his ability to throw the football?
Well, I did. I watched about 6-7 games on all those guys, the top 6 quarterbacks coming out, and I wrote them up for the NFL Draft Bible. I think some people just look at stats and then start forming an opinion. What I saw is a very accurate throw. I thought he put it where he wanted to put it. He didn't have a lot of wide open guys, and he was trying to put the ball down the field in that 15 to 20 yard range a lot more than a lot of college quarterbacks do. So, to me, I think he was throwing it right where he wanted to throw it. He didn't have the situation Baker Mayfield had where every time he dropped back, the pocket was clean. guys were wide open, that sort of thing. And yeah, like I said, at the end of the day, you better do your when you're looking at quarterbacks, you're going to put a draft pick on one. You better take a lot of time to examine the end zone tape and how they play with people around them, because once you get to the NFL, that's the name of the game. There's going to be no clean pockets, and there's going to be no wide open receivers.
With Steve Fairchild, former Bills offensive coordinator, he wrote a piece, several pieces really, for the NFLDraftBible.com. And you had Josh Allen, Buffalo's Josh Allen now, is your number one quarterback prospect. You mentioned his ability to operate with people around him, Josh Allen. He saw a lot of that, especially in his senior year, his last year at Wyoming, didn't he?
Well, he certainly did. And when you go back and look at his junior tape, he had a really tremendous year. And then a lot of those guys left. He lost a receiver and a running back and a bunch of offensive linemen. And just the play around him decreased a little bit. And that's going to affect any quarterback. But there's not a throw the guy can't make. He's got elite size, elite arm strength. He's quick with the ball, which is rare for guys his size. I think he's very accurate. He's certainly a tough guy. When you watch him on tape, he plays the game like you're supposed to play it. So, you know, there's no guarantees. I think when you look at quarterbacks coming out, they need help. I mean, they need some coaches around them. They need some players around them. But I think given the right situation, he can be a very, very good NFL quarterback.
Steve Fairchild, NFL coach and former head coach at Colorado State as well. You also had a chance this last offseason to work with a couple of guys that are of local interest here in Buffalo. Chad Kelly, Jim Kelly's nephew, who is also was Mr. Irrelevant in last year's draft, coming off an injury, and now in these OTAs has been the only quarterback standing for the Denver Broncos. He's been the only quarterback in camp. You had a chance to work with Chad. Talk to us about what you see in him.
I really like Chad, and I've gotten a chance to know him this offseason. I certainly knew about him, but you know, I've retired, moved out to Denver, and he's obviously with the Broncos. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we started training a little bit this offseason. And Chad's a very talented, hardworking guy and just loves the game of football. And you know, he was very, very focused this offseason to make the most of this opportunity that he has. They're going to start OTAs in Denver tomorrow. And he's really ready to go. He's worked extremely hard, and I think they're going to really be surprised with where he's at and very happy with his performance.
Coach, what do you think the ceiling is for Chad Kelly? I mean, he's out there fighting, I guess, for the number two spot. Could he someday be more than that in the National Football League?
I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a starter in the right situation. He's got big arm. You know, he's accurate. He's really improved his footwork. You know, he's certainly got a jump on everybody in terms of study, and they've got a new offensive coordinator now with Coach Musgrave, and you know, he's got a leg up studying that stuff. So he seems like a real pro to me. He seems like he knows this is his opportunity this year, and he's certainly going to try to capitalize on it.
Well, speaking of opportunity, you also were the offensive coordinator in the Spring Development League, in which you had a chance to get up close and personal with Johnny Manziel, who's trying to make a comeback in the Canadian Football League. What can you tell us about his progress and what you saw about the things that he's tried to change in his own life?
Well, he too realized you could see a real seriousness about Johnny when we got down to Austin and did that Spring League. That's really a neat idea when you think about it, because it allows not only guys like Johnny Manziel, but all sorts of guys at various positions that are close to making NFL rosters and didn't make it. It gives them one more shot and a chance to play against each other and showcase what they can do. And that's what it was with Johnny. He got some, along with a bunch of other quarterbacks, got some time playing, you know, at a high level in games, and it helps in their developmental process. And you know, there was a number of players down there that signed, and Johnny was one of them, and he's got a chance now, I believe, up in the CFL. And that's probably good for his game, because he's not a real pocket passer. He's more of a create guy, and I think the width of that field and his athletic ability and ability to see and throw on the run is going to translate well up there in the CFL.
Steve Fairchild spent a couple of years as offense coordinator here with the Buffalo Bills, 06 and 07. And I want to ask you about a couple of the quarterbacks you had back then, Steve, and maybe just get your sense on why things turned out the way they did. Let's start with J.P. Lossman, a former first-round pick. You had him here as your starter for most of the 06 season. What do you think of J.P. looking back now, 10, 12 years, and what, I guess, went wrong with J.P. as an NFL prospect?
Well, I think J.P. was talented. You know, I probably look back, there's some things that I could have helped him more with. I was coming in and trying to install an entire offense, and probably with somebody like J.P. it would have been a little better to tone it down and kind of get a feel for where he was at instead of just dump the whole thing on him. But he had some ability. He had some arm strength and some things that you would like. It just didn't work out well. And like I said, probably it's much my fault as it is his. But I really enjoyed my time back there. Buffalo is a really cool place. Got some great fans, and it's fun to be a part of the Bills.
Lossman did a little coaching. Did you know that, Coach? We had him on the show last fall, and he was like a volunteer quarterback assistant at Clemson University.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah,
that's a great. That's a great step for him. That's wonderful.
And tell me your time with Trent Edwards. What did you make of him, and what kind of a quarterback was he for you?
Trent was a very sharp guy, very, very good in the pocket, didn't have a big arm, but right. Was accurate and could get the ball out of his hands. You know, he was one of those guys I thought was going to stick and make a career out of it, maybe not be an elite starter, but could hang on and play and get you out of the game and that sort of thing. And I think that's the way his career went for most of it.
It's so hard, as you can appreciate, and we've been living with it up here in Buffalo since Kelly left. That's what, you know, the difficulty finding the franchise caliber quarterback is, it's until you have one, you're obsessed with finding him. I had a GM tell me that a couple of years ago, and he's right. And as you can imagine, folks here in Buffalo are wondering, hoping that maybe Josh Allen is the answer. What do you think?
I'm quite certain that he is, and I think people are going to be very, very happy with him being a part of the Bills, and I don't think there's any question that he's got what it takes to make that transition from college into the NFL and be an elite starting quarterback. I'm kind of excited for him, and I'm very interested to watch him play this next season.
Coach, you said you're retired, no coaching, 35 years college and NFL, and that's it for you?
Well, I'm staying busy. I do a lot of training, and I do some consulting, and I'm kind of on my own terms. My wife and I are enjoying life, and we've got some kids out here in Denver, so we moved out here. No complaints, but love Buffalo. Still have some friends, and we've been back. And Bills gave me my first job in the NFL as a running back coach, in 2001, and I'll always be a Bills fan, and always kind of be thankful for that organization giving me that chance.
That's good to hear, Coach. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Oh, thanks for having me on. You guys have a great day.
You too. Steve Fairchild, former Bills offensive coordinator. High marks for Josh Allen from Coach Fairchild and for Chad Kelly. And Steve joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. The stuff he said about Josh Allen, you need a guy with size, which he has.
Yeah.
You need a guy who can operate with people around you in the pocket. Which he did.
He did
at Wyoming. Those are good signs, I think.
Yeah, he was very high on him, and I see that, and I that's one of the things about having coaches on. When those guys get a guy with a lot of talent, like Josh Allen has a lot of raw abilities, they always feel like they can fix that.
Yeah,
and that's one thing they can fix. They can coach him up to use those abilities. But when you get when you see a guy who stands in the pocket, and like he said, if ultimately, the NFL is structured to have a guy that stands in the pocket and can make the throws. You have to win with a guy who can stand there and make a throw in the face of a rush. And all those coaches look at Josh Allen and see that exact same thing. So it's interesting. All the football people are kind of sold on Josh Allen. The media people and some of the fans, not so much. I mean, they still think he's got a little too rough.
Well, I think about that a lot. And, right. Now we're a month removed, 4 or 5 weeks removed from the draft, and the narrative has sort of changed a little bit here in Buffalo. It was so anti-Josh Allen right before the draft, a week or two. I was on this show, Steve, just before you got here, saying, trying to tell listeners, look, this guy's going to go top 10. He's that talented. He's got that much potential. And as I think back on it, I think that the draft gurus, the people who do draft stuff for a living, and the media all kind of find the faults. And yes, even a coach can find faults, but the coaches, the guys who, as you just said, they look for, okay, what can we work with here? What can we fix? What are his shortcomings? And I think that might be a more instructive way to look at a prospect in the NFL, not what he can't do, because right. You can see it. Everybody can see it. You can see Josh Allen. You can still go and watch the video on the internet and watch him, you know, miss passes, throw badly. But you look at the things he has: size, arm strength, arm talent, the ability to play with people, you know, crawling around him, opponents, defenders, you know, in his face. They see that, coaches see that, and think, oh, okay, that's good, and I can work on the other stuff. That's important.
That's right, and they tend to see the upside, but knowing that they're going to help the kid approach that upside. You know, they're going to coach the bad stuff out. They always have confidence in their own ability to get the most out of their players, and that's why they want these big, raw, talented guys. And plus the fact that the big, raw, talented guys, you know, look good coming off the bus too. I mean, you don't have to explain why the guy looks like a football player, and that's right. There's a little bit of that too. There's a little bit of a security blanket in what those guys can show you and what they look like on the practice field. So it's never a guarantee, that's nope. For sure. But the coaches love those guys.
I found what Coach Fairchild said about Johnny Manziel interesting also, because Manziel does not fit the profile of a size guy or a pocket
guy.
He's
not 6 foot.
No. So he, as far as Manziel's projection into the NFL, we didn't ask Coach Fairchild this. I'd be surprised if he thought he was going to jump into the NFL and be a good starting NFL quarterback. Certainly that could happen, but I don't think he would project that, because he doesn't fit the profile for what Coach Fairchild said are the kind of the requisites for being an NFL quarterback.
And I'll tell you, his game, and Fairchild said it, his game does translate well to a big field and to yep. a more wide-open throwing league. I mean, you get up to Canada, it's a three-down football, so you get first down, second down, and then punt. Having a quarterback that can keep plays alive, which is what we all remember Johnny Manziel. When we see Johnny Manziel at his best, when he won the Heisman Trophy there at Texas A&M, I mean, he was running around making throws, accurate throws across the field, across his body, down the field, dumping them off, running for touchdowns, breaking outside contain, and that was the way he played. I imagine that's what you'll see him do in Canada, because of so much space out there. He does have a pretty accurate arm. When I watched him in college, I thought, well, yeah, he can put it in there, and there'll be more space for him to do that up there because of the larger field. So he's a really intriguing prospect for the Canadian Football League. I think he has a chance to be very good up there. But like I said, it's not just show up, start taking snaps. It's a different football game up there. And it is a competitive league, and it's he's going to have to work hard at it to be good.
We're going to talk more about Johnny Manziel at 2 o'clock today, when we have his new coach for the – or at 1:30. Why did I say 2? 1:30. No, it's only a couple minutes away.
Yeah, a couple minutes away.
June Jones is going to join us, his coach with the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Interesting, we got June Jones on. They're in the middle of training camp.
Yeah. What time do they practice today? Probably morning, I would guess.
I guess.
That's good work. That's good producing work.
That is good production, Jay Harris.
Yeah, good work.
And I'll tell you about it. June Jones is a really interesting cat. What a career he has had, and he is a very well respected man in the football ranks. Both
run
not
and
in,
shoot, right? That not, was his bad.
Not in not only in the CFL, but obviously in the NFL, where he was a head coach for the Atlanta Falcons. He was a head coach for a minute for the San Diego Chargers as well. He had a long list
played
of
in the
jobs.
NFL.
He had a long list of coaching stops in the NFL. He started out in the USFL with the Houston Gamblers and the Denver Gold. He was in the CFL with the Ottawa Rough Riders, and then he was with the Houston Oilers for a couple of years, the Detroit Lions for a couple of years, and then he was the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons starting in 94, but he was with the Falcons all the way back in 91. And then, of course, had a long stint in Hawaii and finished up his head coaching career before he went to the CFL at SMU in 2014. Now he's back in the CFL.
He is your son Luke's coach in Hamilton.
Yes, he is.
Will that be awkward for you to ask him a few questions?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm come on, man. I'm a total professional.
You're very decent.
I'm a decent guy.
All right, a break here. When we come back, June Jones is going to join us. So come on back for that. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our one Buffalo studio.
It's unbelievable. I'm here on a Monday.
No, you're right. Doing a full week, a 4-day week anyway. Hey, Johnny Manziel is now a Hamilton Tiger Cat and joining us on the Subway French Take Hotline. Longtime coach, and he is the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats now in his second season there. We are very happy to have Coach June Jones on the line with us. Coach, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us.
John, good to hear your voice. And Steve Tasker, Jerry Glanville says aloha. And Luke is having a good camp.
Well, awesome. I was going to ask you about number 17, see how he's doing. I got to tell you, I'm thinking, I hope you guys are going to be in camp. I want to come up there like maybe on Friday or something. We got a day off. I want to come up and see you guys. I haven't laid eyes on Jerry Glanville for a lot of years. I got to come up and say hello to him.
For sure. You were one of his full speed to play in on teams for him, and he's doing a great job up here.
Coach, he's your defensive coordinator there, right?
Yes, he is. He sure is.
And so you guys, let me tell you, you can call it quits. I mean, you're a guy, you're 65 years old. You've had an illustrious career as a coach in the NFL, the CFL, the USFL. I mean, you've seen it all. And Jerry got three different teams to the playoffs in the NFL. I mean, he's a well-respected guy. He's inventing the grits blitz and all of that stuff. You guys, I tell people this all the time. They ask me why I didn't go into coaching. It's like the mafia. You can't get out until you're dead. You guys, it's not just a job. It's a lifestyle, is it not? You guys are back in it. You can't quit.
Yeah, I think as well. I think, he's got it in his blood. I think once you coach for the number of years that Jerry's coached and as many years as I've played and coached, it's the same way. You just keep going. I mean, that's your life. And it's kind of like military life. You got to go where the jobs are. So we've lived in 30 cities probably between us, and that's part of the deal.
Well, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you spending some time with us. I know you're in the thick of training camp. Talk to us a little bit about your new quarterback and about the Tie Cats overall.
Well, I'm thinking that we've got a chance to be pretty good. We got pretty much all our players back. I didn't have an opportunity to even have a training camp when I took over last year. They were 0-8, and I was kind of surprised to get into that position. But we ended up doing really well. We ended up finishing. First. We were dead last in every category, both sides of the ball. At 0-8, and there's a reason why you're 0-8. And then the 10 games that I was here, we ended up number one in everything, both offensively and defensively. So that's pretty incredible that you walk into that situation. But my coaches bought into it, players bought into it, and we got it done.
Coach, I was looking over your extensive resume. This is you are not unfamiliar with Canadian football, right? You were there like 30 years ago, right? You coached in the CFL.
Yeah, I played up here in 1982 with the Argos, and then I coached with the Ottawa Rough Riders at the time. In 1986, after the USFL folded, I was up here for a year.
Do you find that the game, your offense is sort of tailored to what Canadian football is all about? You must have kind of a good relationship, I would think.
Yeah, well, to be quite honest, it's interesting because when I came up here, Mouse Davis was the coordinator at Toronto, and I played for him in college. And to be quite honest, he changed the game up here. In those days, there was hardly any downhill motion or any motion going right and left. And if they were downhill, it was one or two guys. Now the whole field is going and running and reading things on the move. And so Mouse really had a big impact on how the game's played up here.
That's also the offense you took to the Houston Oilers, and you guys, with the run and shoot. I mean, you were I played with Jim Kelly, who played for the Gamblers. It's a style that really in the 10 games you had last year, the last half of the season with Jeremiah Masoli as your quarterback, you really did flip a light switch and with the same guys, turned it into a team that looked completely different.
Yeah, we did, Jim Kelly, you mentioned, and while you were in Buffalo, Marv Levy was in the USFL with the Chicago Blitz, and of course we were having all the success we were having with Jim and Ricky Sanders and all the guys that kind of became kind of the undersized receivers for the Redskins and different teams. And so what happened was we Marv saw what we were doing, and they weren't winning in Chicago, but he ended up getting the job at Buffalo, and basically between Jim and he kind of got him back into March of Brota's concepts, which were three wides and a tight end, four wides, a lot, more than anybody was ever doing. Of course, the rest is history. I think there was, what is it, five Super Bowls they went to. So that's pretty impressive.
On the line with June Jones, head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And, Coach, I don't know if you've had a chance. Is Manziel thrown for you yet? He just got there yesterday, right? Has he done anything in the field
yet? Yeah, he observed yesterday. He took some throws today. He did all the individual stuff and then threw a bunch of the routes, too. And, you know, his head's swimming a little bit right now, but he'll get his chance to get his repetitions in there and get something done. So we'll see. It's going to be kind of a fun time, really.
When's your first preseason game coming up?
June 1st against Toronto here.
Right.
Now, his head's swimming because what? Because of the different style of offense, different rules that you have?
No, not really. The terminology. He doesn't know what a play is called.
How does he look? As you know, throwing the football. How does he look condition wise?
He's in good shape. You know, he played in that spring league down in Texas, and then I had worked him out two times last year, and he's got enough arm, and he can make every throw, and he'll be good in what we do.
Is there anything about his game that might lend itself to, you know, the different style of play in the CFL?
Well, obviously his running ability is probably second to none. You know, I think when the play breaks down, the field's so big, he can make a lot of things, you know, a lot of things happen. So, you know, we'll see as it goes.
Is the real question, June, and I was talking this about, is – he still has a lot to learn what happens after the snap in your offense, correct? I mean, he's got to make reads on the drop, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's going to take some time. But, you know, he's a smart kid. I already know that. And, you know, he'll get it done.
Coach, I wonder, since Manziel signed over the weekend, I'd imagine you've done a couple of interviews and probably a lot more attention focused on the Ticats the last few days, huh?
Well, you're my first interview off the air, but of course, instead of like three beat writers, there's about 100 people.
Because there's buzz. Manziel brings buzz to your team and to the league a little bit, right?
To the league, yeah. No, it's a plus for everybody.
I wonder if he'll bring fans. I would think that there's some Buffalo fans who will make the short drive. What are we talking about, 45 minutes to Hamilton to see a game? I would think some Bills fans will be headed up there to watch Manziel.
Yeah, no question. I think that's true, and I think you know, I think also there's going to be a whole bunch of people from Texas A&M coming up here to our game.
You're right. Yeah.
You're right.
And a little contingent from East Aurora, New York to see Luke Tasker as well.
I'll be there. I'm looking forward to seeing. I am going to stop by training camp maybe early this weekend, maybe on Friday. I'll come up and say hello. I hope you guys don't have a day off or something on Friday.
No, we're practicing.
All right, maybe I'll come up and see if I can hang out. I'm looking forward to meeting you, and I know we met briefly when you were head coach of the Falcons, and of course Jerry Glanville and I go way back.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you, and hopefully the sun's out like it is today.
Coach, thanks for this. Thanks for joining us, and good luck.
All right, you take care.
Head coach June Jones of the Hamilton Tiger Cats of Canadian football. He's got Luke Tasker on the roster. He's back there for, what'd you say, his sixth season, Luke?
His sixth season coming up, yeah.
He's got Johnny Manziel on the roster for a couple of days, and they do have that preseason game coming up Friday, June 1st. So it's at not this Friday, but a week from this Friday, right, against Toronto. 7:30 kickoff at home in Hamilton, and the stadium is Tim Horton Field, right?
Tim Horton Field, and it's a virtually almost a brand-new stadium. It's they're having their training camp at McMaster University, which is right in downtown Hamilton, but the stadium built, I think, 3 years ago was brand new, and it's a 25,000-seat stadium. They got a nice game day experience. It's action. It's got a, you know, replay board. It's got all the bells and whistles of an NFL city, except an NFL stadium, except it's just a little smaller and a little more homey. And it's weird too, because that field is big.
Yeah,
the field is big, and it's a fun league.
Will you take me to a game this year? I don't care about preseason as much.
No, absolutely.
I wanna go.
Listen, believe me, I got a whole family contingents coming up. You know, I grew up in Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my mom and dad, who are, you know, they're going to be 88 this Labor Day, before this Labor Day, they want to come up for a game. I got a couple of brothers that they all like to come up for the Labor Day Classic, which is a big tradition in the Canadian Football League. All the rivalry games take place
Monday,
on Labor
September
Day.
Monday, September 3rd, Toronto right. at Hamilton.
And it's always a Toronto game, and it's always on Monday. And it's you know, very in Canada, it's a very patriotic game for them, you know, and there's a flyby and all that stuff. And so all my whole contingent, we all go up for that. We try to go to every home game when I'm available, but – my wife and the kid, the family that are here, everybody goes up for every home game. But I go to every one I can. But you're certainly invited.
I want to go. We almost went last year. I told you
got to come up. Yeah, it's fun. You'll like it. You'll like it. It'll be good for you before the season starts because, you know, then both of us are kind of out of the loop.
Here's a question for a typical Bills fan, I guess. I would put myself in this category. Can you go not fully understanding all of the CFL rules and still enjoy?
Yeah.
Can you pick it up?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun, too, because you get surprised sometimes by the rules.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that got me as a special teams guy, when you kick it, if they don't bring it out of the end zone, it's a point for the team that kicked it. When they kick a punt, when they punt it, and you're covering it, you have to stay 5 yards away from the guy that's catching the punt. And if you're closer than 5 yards, if he catches it in the air, it's a 15-yard penalty. If it bounces and you're within 5 yards, it's only a 5-yard penalty. And then they've got all this other stuff that goes on too. I can't even begin to tell you how different it is. But it's a wide open game. It's a very big field, and it's fun to watch. I think that gets me about everything. They can challenge any penalty at any time. I told you that last week when we were talking about replay challenge, when our Twitter poll was about which rule would you change. And then also, it's two-down football. It's first down, second down. Then they punt it away. So you can go out there, and I'm telling you what, if your offense isn't clicking in the first couple of series, it's not a three and out, it's a two and out, and you're never on the field on offense. Yeah. I mean, it takes forever to get the ball. And so that's all of that stuff put together makes it a pretty interesting game.
On the kickoffs, the fact that you can get a point if
you don't bring it out
into the end zone, that means guys are always bringing it out, right? Nobody wants to kneel it down now.
Right. They don't. And it's – you see a lot of wild swing plays. You see a lot of and if a field goal is missed, you can return that because the end zones are so big, you know, there's room, and you got to bring it out. So
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's fun.
How do you think Manziel will fit in there? Is this it's not a publicity stunt.
No. It's a competitive league. And I tell you what, the NFL tracks all the players up there.
Yeah.
They track them and they scout them. And like I told you, I said a lot of defenders play, you know, Cam Wake. The great Miami Dolphin player, he was a defender up there. There's been a number of guys who have come down, and you know, quarterbacks as well, like from Joe Theismann, Joe Kapp, and back in the past, other guys. But it's – what did you just ask me about?
How is Manziel going to do?
I think his skill set translates really well because he's got a strong enough arm, can make throws deep down the field. He can make deep crossing routes and, you know, to the far side of the field outside the numbers on a very, very wide field. And he can extend plays. And when you extend plays in that league, because it's such a big field, that defense gets spread very, very thin, and you can find windows.
So Albert Breer reports that Manziel flew a red eye over the weekend from Los Angeles to Buffalo, spent 3 hours getting a work permit. You would need that, right? Crossing over into Canada. He's got to be an American citizen. Did a press conference, and as Coach June Jones just told us, Manziel was on the field today. I don't know if there's NFL in the future for Johnny Manziel. I mean, I'll tell you what, I will say this. I give him credit. I'm not a Johnny Manziel fan. I think he's been pretty much a bad character for most of his post-college and even dipped back into college a little bit. But I give him credit. If he wants to get back in the NFL, this is a good faith way of showing it, right? To go to a team playing, you know, competitive football in the Canadian Football League, to show teams in the NFL that he is straight and that he's on the straight and narrow, and that maybe he can play a little bit too. I give him credit for pursuing this, Steve.
Yeah,
I give him a lot of credit.
And it's been all him too. I mean, nobody's telling him he has to play football,
right?
And it's not like he's, you know, doesn't have anything else to do. I mean, his family is well off, I guess, and he hasn't, you know. So it's all. This is something he wants to do. He wants to play football, and if he's going to make it happen, he's going to have to change. He had to change the way he was living his life, and good for him. He's done it. He's started on that road back.
2-year deal, Johnny Manziel with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and I don't know if those deals are guaranteed. You know,
it's just like every other. It's like a football deal, yeah. And in fact, it's interesting. I know that because that's the exact same contract length of contract my son signed. It coincides. He signed a 2-year deal this offseason. So, their contracts are running at the same time.
Coach June Jones said to us, I asked about Buffalo fans. He's thinking maybe Texas A&M fans will make the trip.
That's a long way.
It's a long way, but I can see it.
But you know what?
He was a legend down there.
You can fly into Toronto easy enough. That's easy, and it's right there. Or you can fly into Buffalo, just like he said.
But he was a college legend for his career.
He won the Heisman Trophy at Texas A&M.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's legendary.
He's legendary. And now he's playing right up the road in Hamilton. Yeah. It looks, as Coach said, Friday, June 1st, they've got that preseason game at home in Hamilton against Toronto. Looks like they open the season Saturday, June 16, on the road at Calgary, and then the following week at Edmonton. They don't stay out west on those trips, do they?
They do. They will this time.
Calgary,
yeah.
Edmonton.
Yeah, they will
stay
out west.
It's a Saturday, Friday. And then the home opener, regular season, Friday, June 29, home against Winnipeg at 7 o'clock. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you like talking about this?
I do.
Proud of Luke.
I am. He loves it. I love watching him. It's fun.
Yeah.
That league is built for him. And I'll tell you, the people ask me the different for the American players that go up there, like Johnny Manziel. He's 5'11¾" or whatever. Jeremiah Mazzoli is 5'9", the incumbent quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's what I noticed about the skill position of the players up there. They're very skilled, very accomplished, but they're short.
Too short.
That's
yeah.
the difference.
Yeah.
They have everything else going for strong arms. They can move. They can do all this stuff, but they're short.
How tall is Luke?
Luke's 5'11".
Okay.
Maybe a hair more than 5'11".
So it'd be tough for him in the NFL.
Well, he's one of those guys, you know. And he's a 4'5 guy, 40, 4'5'9", almost a 4'6 guy. You know, he's a route runner.
And
but
yet,
he thrives up there.
Yeah. Cool. It was good talking to Coach June Jones. We thank you for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Steve and I back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We're back, One Bills Live. Jeff Murphy and Steve Castro. We just spent the commercial break. Reminiscing, I guess, is what we were doing, Steve. You were telling me, Jerry Glanville, your former head coach at Houston before you came to Buffalo, is now a 76-year-old defensive coordinator in the Canadian Football League for June Jones Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Once you go into coaching, man,
what'd you say is the mob?
It's like the mob. You can't get out till you're dead. It is.
Glanville,
it really is.
I mean, he coached here. He was on Chuck Knox's staff here for a while.
He loved it here. He to this very day, he'll tell you his wife cried twice. Once when they came to Buffalo because he was going to Buffalo, and then when they left, she cried too. They loved it here. When they got here, they just fell in love with the like everybody does.
You and he were close though in your days in Houston.
I loved it. He says, "Listen, Minnie, my nickname was Minnie." So Minnie, he goes, "Minnie, here's your job. I want you to stand right next to me for this whole series, right here." And I've got my helmet on. I'm standing next to him. He's my height, right?
Yeah.
He goes, "I want you to stand there and find out." And we're going, he goes, "Yeah." And so after the game, we're going, the reason I want you to stand by me, he's telling me in practice that week, he goes, "You stand by me on the sidelines because everybody thinks football players are about 6'2". And I look bigger when I'm standing next to you. It's like, seriously? I go, "You already stand next to you so you look tall?"
He is a character. Was a character.
Yeah. This is the head coach that left tickets. We went to Graceland yesterday. Yeah. He left tickets for Elvis every game, and to get the tickets, you had to know who Aaron, what Aaron, it was Elvis's middle name was Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
And you had to know that. He says, if he doesn't know that name, he goes, "That ain't him."
Why? I mean, coaching, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he used to dress in all black. He used to dress in a rain slicker and boots and a big belt buckle and a hat on the side. He was a cowboy.
Yeah.
And he's riding motorcycles when he was young, like street bikes, choppers, to and from the stadium. And in his month off, he'd take his motorcycle and head west just by himself, just go.
What a character.
Yeah, he's a nut.
I think I'm going to.
He's 76, and he's coaching the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
How can you not love the Tiger Cats right now? Right? Listen, know you got a reason to, but yeah. I mean, look at the characters there. Look at the names there.
And you know what? You remember the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs? He was the special teams coach, Frank Gans.
Uh-huh.
He was a head coach and then went from the special teams coordinator to the head coach.
He was one of the great
because he was
teams
so
coaches.
Inspirational to his players in Kansas City. Lamar Hunt said, you know what? Make the guy the head coach. So they did. Now, he wasn't a very good head coach, but now – June Jones has brought Frank Gans up to Hamilton as a consultant during training camp. He won't be there the whole year, but he's just there for the training camp. And Frank Gans is also in Hamilton helping out with special teams in the Canadian League. I'm telling you, man, it's one of those things, man. It's like a brotherhood. You get in it, you never leave.
I'm looking at their whole coaching roster here because there's got to be others. I don't recognize any names here. Craig Butler, special teams defensive assistant.
Yeah.
Man, that's my second favorite team all of a sudden, the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Pretty cool stuff. Thanks again to June Jones for joining us. We've got another hour to come. We want to get back to our topic of the day when we come back in the next hour. And we want you to think about the Buffalo Bills offensively. We've talked to a couple of offensive guys already today in Steve Fairchild and June Jones. Looking at the Bills as they get ready for OTAs beginning tomorrow. And I would think at OTA, Steve, the competition for jobs gets a little more heated, right, starting tomorrow?
Yeah,
because they're doing offense versus defense.
Right, because they're going to see actually break on people and you know, move it around and pick up and catch checks. It's not just a walkthrough where if you take one wrong step, nobody notices. You know, I mean, it's just one higher level of up to full speed learning and, you know, and all the responsibilities that go with it and the complications that go with it.
So with that in mind, what is the most competitive position battle on the offensive side of the ball for the Buffalo Bills? That's our Twitter poll, 2,400 votes in already. And on Twitter, more than half of you think it's quarterback, which makes sense. That's the kind of the marquee position, right? More than half of you think quarterback is the most competitive position battle, 56%. 21% of you say offensive line. 19% say wide receiver. 4% have something else in mind. Lots of time to take your phone calls and discuss this in the third and final hour of the show. Give us a call. Lines are open now, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The most competitive position battle for the Buffalo offense as we move through the summer, through the OTAs and minicamp. Give us a call. We'll talk more about that when we come back for the third and final hour of the show. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills went back to work today after the weekend off. Final day of the off-season conditioning program. Rookies and veterans on the field tomorrow. All back for day one of OTA's organized team activity. It is the third phase of the off-season. The practices including some teamwork, offense versus defense. Three OTA sessions this week. Total of 9 over the next 3 weeks. Attendance voluntary. 3-day mandatory minicamp follows the OTAs. Tom Brady not present for the opening of the Patriots organized team activity today. Brady regularly has been a participant in the voluntary OTAs, but he skipped all of the team's offseason programs so far this season. Pro Bowl defensive tackle Aaron Donald has told the Rams he will not attend their organized team activities that started today. Still looking for a new contract. Again, voluntary attendance there. Nashville, Tennessee expected to be named the host of the 2019 NFL Draft. The owners' meetings convening in Atlanta, Georgia. Other cities under consideration, Las Vegas, Denver, Kansas City, and Cleveland, Canton, Ohio. We talked with his coach a few minutes ago, and Johnny Manziel on the field today for the Hamilton Tiger Cats training camp, the 2012 Heisman Trophy winner. Watched a lot of the session yesterday, a day after he signed with the CFL Hamilton Tiger Cats. He was on the field today, throwing it around a little bit. The Vegas Golden Knights move on to the Stanley Cup Finals. They call themselves the Golden Misfits. All drafted, most of them drafted in the expansion draft, and they beat the Winnipeg Jets 2-1 on the road to win their Western Conference Final Series 4-1. They await the winner of the Eastern Conference Finals, Tampa Bay and Washington, tonight. Those two teams play Game 6 of their series in Washington. Tampa Bay leads the series 3-2. That's an 8 o'clock faceoff tonight in Washington. And the NBA playoffs, tonight Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals, Boston and Cleveland, 8:30 tip-off on ESPN tonight. Last night, Golden State hammered Houston 126-85 in the West to take a 2-1 edge over the Houston Rockets. Steph Curry with 35 points in that game. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. A lot to talk about this hour. Want to get some phone calls on with you. Want you to let us know what's the most competitive position battle for the Buffalo Bills on the offensive side of the ball. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. But, Mr. Tasker, a couple of things to go through with you in the sports world. I know you came in today all fired up about the Las Vegas Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, this morning he was on fire about it, folks. Right,
a pickup team's going to win the Stanley Cup.
He had plenty to say.
A pickup team is going to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's a beer league.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's a beer league.
I can't disagree.
It's a beer league.
The instigators talked about it at length today, but it says something about the league that a team of misfits, they call themselves the wonderful misfits.
Yeah, the bottom misfits. 12 guys on every roster get there in that the draft. They're in the expansion draft.
Yep.
They pick 20 of them. They come together, and they're the best team in the league.
Well, the best team in the West. I think they're going to get handled by Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay's found its stride, and they're going to be really good now. But, yeah, it does say something. I don't think it's a good look for the league to have an expansion team in the Stanley Cup Finals. I really don't. And it's demoralizing.
No kidding.
I think demoralizing to fans in places like Buffalo, by the way.
Like Buffalo and Toronto and Montreal and you name it. And you got these people playing like me. Paying a few grand for season tickets, a couple of handfuls of grand for season tickets, and you got that team out west that just pops up on the map and straight to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Not right.
That is not right. It just drives me crazy. I'm always up in arms about, Major League Baseball or the NHL or whatever, but hey, good for those guys. I mean, I get it.
Oh, no.
But you know what? That just is not the way it's supposed to be. That is not the way it's supposed to be. And I'm not saying, hey, the oldest team or the whatever, but certainly it should have something to do with it.
Well, there should be something more than a couple of months that goes into an appearance in the Stanley Cup Finals, right? It should be something that you build towards, that you begin to put your team together a couple of years ago. To have it go so easily for Las Vegas, just kind of, you're like, what kind of a league is this?
I know, right?
What kind of a league is this?
Right?
Is that all it takes? A little luck, some good goaltending, and a bunch of cast-offs.
That says something about the sport.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And it's not good.
And it's not complimentary.
It's not complimentary. And all these guys, and they got a lot. And listen, they've got a lot of quality people in the NHL. Here in Buffalo, I know they've got a bunch of smart people working hard. And every other NHL city, they got people that have dedicated their adult lives. It's a career for them to think of ways and to dissect the rules and come up with strategies about getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. And to win the Stanley Cup. And here, this team didn't exist
a year ago.
And, they do something that, teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs haven't been able to do since 1967. They haven't been able to get to the finals.
All right.
I mean, it's just nuts.
Here's a team that I think merits an appearance in the finals, and they're on their way there, I believe. The Golden State Warriors hammering Houston last night, 126-85. A week or so ago, you and I were talking about NBA playoffs. You mentioned to me how impressed you were by the Celtics. I see that. Celtics, hanging around a little bit with Cleveland, although it's, two games to one now?
No.
Boston on top.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it two games to one?
Yep.
Oh, I thought that's –
game four in Cleveland tonight. Cleveland played pretty well the other day, Saturday. But let me tell you, neither Cleveland nor Boston has a chance against the Warriors. I'm here to tell you that. Right now, Steve, I'm telling you, Steph Curry went off last night, right, 35 points. The rest of the team is great. And they just can't play with them. So the Houston Rockets can't even compete. This is supposed to be many people thought the Western Conference Finals were the NBA Finals. Houston can't compete with Golden State. The Warriors are this year.
Listen, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Golden State Warriors 2 years ago.
Different team. Cleveland doesn't have that team anymore. They don't have that team.
Well, Kyrie's gone.
Yeah, that's a big part of their team.
Well,
they can't play.
I don't know.
Third,
we'll see.
And finally. And all of these were issues in the sports update I just did. I think I know how you feel about this. Tom Brady, not at the opening of the Patriots OTAs today. He's never missed voluntary workouts in the past. This is the guy who would get, premier parking spots at the Patriots complex for attendance at off-season workouts. He hasn't been there. Now, he says he's going to play. He was on that TV show a couple of weeks ago. Says he's committed to playing the season, but he hasn't been to one, not one, off-season workout. What's going on with that,
Murph,
Steve?
You've been begging to get this topic on for ever since
day one. Because I think there's something
one.
Afoot in New England. I really do.
Yeah, I think Tom Brady's been doing it for 17 years. He's 40 years old. He doesn't want to come in and go through gym shorts and conditioning drills when he's got a guy he pays a lot of money to get him in shape, and he doesn't want to go through the headache of going in there and having to grind it out and be, you know, symbolically Bill Belichick's whipping boy so Bill Belichick can make a point to the other roster that nobody's above being disciplined by this organization. You're going to fall in line because, look, Tom Brady does it. Now, he's just tired of doing that.
I think
he's just tired of doing it.
And I think that indicates a rift, a divide between Belichick and Brady, which can only mean good things in the future for the Buffalo Bills. Seriously, I think there's something is up, and it does deal with his trainer, his personal trainer, his personal training regimen, which he's trying to market and sell for his post-football career. That's fine. I think he has kind of put that ahead of the message he has sent, Brady I'm talking about, the message he has sent for more than a decade, like nobody works harder than me and nobody does. We are the Patriots. This is how we work in the offseason. This is how we attend all the voluntary workouts. Well, all of a sudden that's not important to Tom Brady? That, to me, says something about a split there. I think something is
afoot. Well, a split might be an overstatement of it, but certainly he's like, you know what, I don't need to be there. And the only reason I was
there. Well, he didn't need to be there 10 years ago either, probably.
Maybe not, but you know what? He's like, I'm just not going to do it. He's got his family's at a spot where his kids are getting older, I'm sure. And don't think that I'm not putting it all on that. But he's at a different spot in his career now. And he's accomplished enough. He's gone to the last two Super Bowls. He's in contention every year. And he's going to be in contention again this year. And there's no reason to go in May as a 40-year-old guy and –
maybe there's more reason to go in as a 40-year-old. Maybe there's more, you know, that your body would benefit from being around a little bit more. I'm just saying, you know, your old buddy Marv Levy used to say, once you start thinking about retirement, you're already retired. Could that be where we're at with Brady? He's thinking about the end. Like
he's never said anything about retiring.
He's not doing what he did.
He's doing what everybody else does.
Most people show for these off-season workouts.
Most, not everybody. It's a big deal in New York when Odell Beckham finally showed up today.
Tom Brady has always shown for these
things. Well, you know, he doesn't.
Why are you defending him?
And you know what? I'm not defending
him. Why can't you acknowledge that something is different about Brady and the Patriots?
Yeah, he's 40. I wouldn't have been showing up 10 years ago. So, and the fact that he waits till he's 40 to miss his very first off-season workout, I guess I'm like, okay.
Workouts.
Whatever.
Okay.
I'm totally down with that. Mostly because I wouldn't do it now. I feel bad. But, yeah, I get it. And, yeah, there probably is a little bit of an underhanded statement by him without having to say anything.
Yeah.
But I don't think it means anything.
I think it means that there's a rift between Brady and Belichick.
Do you think that's going to cost him games? Yeah, that's a tough –
I got to think about that.
No.
Probably
not. No, it's not going to cost him.
Probably not.
The answer is no. It's a no.
I think it signals the beginning of the end, which all of us have been looking forward to, of the Brady-Belichick.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I can see that. There is something different now about that.
Yeah.
The
better.
And I've told you this, too, and I'm not saying anything about anything, but we've seen it before with truly, truly great athletes. It never ends really well.
Right. Oh, that's an on tap for him.
It never ends really well.
Yeah. Belichick will see to it that it doesn't end well.
He might. But, he might try. Robert Kraft will make sure that it does.
Right.
And that's the big thing.
Just
want
to get that on your radar.
Because you think about it. It ended okay for Jim here.
Okay.
Pretty okay.
Okay.
It ended pretty okay for Dan Marino.
Yeah.
It didn't end all that well for Joe Montana. Peyton Manning ended up in Denver and then was benched halfway through his final season, although he did win the Super Bowl. Name some other great quarterbacks.
Didn't end well in San Francisco. Yeah,
Joe Namath ended up in
terrible
with the Rams.
Yep.
Johnny Unitas ended up with the Chargers. You could see something like that.
Yep. Hey, what's the most competitive position battle for the Buffalo Bills offense? That's the topic of the day. It's our Twitter poll. We're taking your phone calls on it, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let us know what you think. Here's Butch in Buffalo. Butch, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for taking my call. And really, this is an important day. I'm glad Steve's here so I can ask him a question. So, Steve, I'm going to ask you the question first before I make my comment about.
I think he's saying you're not here enough, Steve.
Yeah, right.
Not here enough, Steve.
Go ahead, Butch.
I want to say this is we drafted Josh Allen as a quarterback, and everybody's looking at Jim Kelly. And, you know, I'm glad he's talking about Johnny Manziel today because when Jim Kelly left the University of Miami, his first tutor was Jim Jones. And when he went to the USFL and played under Jim Jones in Houston, he learned a lot about the game. He learned a lot about passing, the defenses, the things to look for. Then when he left there, Steve, he came with Jim Ringo, who was the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, and Teddy Marchibroda was the quarterback coach. Eventually, Teddy became the offensive coordinator, and Jim learned from that regime along with Jim Jones his whole career. Saying that, Josh Allen comes in here, and don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking our offensive coordinator because he just got here. But his job this year is to teach the whole offense the offense that he wants them to learn. And the time that he has to spend with Josh Allen one-on-one and along with the team, Steve, like you being a receiver, the coordinator has to install offense and has to work with the position coaches to let them know exactly what he wants. Now, I'm saying that is when I look at a person like an Alex Van Pelt that's just sitting at home right now.
No, he's at Cincinnati.
No, Alex Van Pelt is quarterback coach in Cincinnati for Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis.
He is. Okay, yep. Well, I'm sorry. Thank you for letting me know that.
Yeah.
If we could have someone who could come in, just say a Steve Fairchild, who he's just finished speaking with.
Right.
Come in as an offensive consultant. Just to work with the quarterback while our new offensive coordinator can really get in the groove of showing this offense, I think we'll be three steps ahead. Now, I'm going to go to my poll question. Nate Peterman, I'm a fan of Nate Peterman, and I really believe, don't be surprised, at the end of the training camp, Flores between A.J. McCarron and Nate Peterman now, that Nate go ahead of him. I look at the situation in the future. We have a Josh Allen. We have a Nate Peterman. You might have a Nick Foles and a Carson Wentz. So I'm going to listen to your response.
Okay, thanks, Butch. A decent point. I'm not ruling out Nathan Peterman. He could challenge to be the starter here. I'm repeating what I said first hour of the show. You line him, you put him, stand him right next to Josh Allen and watch him throw a little bit, and there will be no question in your mind who's got the more NFL arm, the better arm. Now, that's not all that it takes, but I think that's real. What about Butch's contention the Bills need a quarterback consultant, Steve? I don't feel good.
Well,
I don't agree.
Yeah, here's the thing. There's no question that, you know, a quarterback coach, what he really does, he's a liaison between the coordinator and the quarterback. And he's really an assistant coordinator. And he has he's kind of like good cop, bad cop, if you want to put it that way. For me, in my mind, I'm a wide receiver saying this, but the quarterback has to have a coach that he can talk to and express his displeasure with. And it can't be the coordinator, because the coordinator and the quarterback have to be a really good combination. They have to be really work closely together. So if the quarterback is unhappy with somebody, if they bring him the playbook, he's got to be able to tell that quarterback coach, "Hey, listen, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this." And that, so he doesn't have to, they don't have to have this combative relationship with a coordinator. Now there can be some animosity between coaches and players. No question about it. Particularly at the level you're talking about, a quarterback, when the quarterback notoriously has to feel comfortable with the plays you're calling. It's up to the coordinator to get that quarterback on the same train of thought that the coordinator is on and use his skills and have the coordinator use the quarterback skills in the best way. So you're right. There, coordinators in the NFL are all about being able to handle a quarterback and maximize his skills and maximize his mental capacity to call a play at the right time and have the exact right mind frame when he does it, so that he knows why it's called. He knows what they're looking for. He knows what the defense is that they expect. All of these things have to be in place, and that's what a coordinator's job is. So you're right. I mean, some of the criticisms now have been, you know, before the draft was, I don't know who's going to work with this young quarterback. Well, Brian Daboll's been working with college quarterbacks last year. That's basically what Josh Allen is up until the time he takes a snap. I think you're right. It is right to be concerned about this coaching staff and about how they're going to handle it, but there's no right to be need to be concerned. It needs to be consideration, but I don't think it's a concern because these guys, they know what they're doing. I got a lot of faith. Yeah, I do. David Culley has been around the National Football League for a long time, and Brian Daboll has been at every level of football over the last 15, 20 years, at the pro level, at the college level, at the highest level of the pro level, at the highest level of the college level. He knows how to put together a game plan, and he's gonna do a great job with these guys. I'm positive.
But I wouldn't worry about it. At least not now. Let's see. I do know, having watched a couple of or at least one rookie minicamp session, Brian Daboll is in his face. He is in Josh Allen's face.
He's coaching him
and
up.
He'll be there. He is coaching him up. He's coaching him hard.
And listen, I don't care who it is. Players want to be coached.
Yeah,
they want to get better, and they appreciate it, particularly because smart players don't take it personally. They know the guy. The coach is on your side. He wants you to play well. So, well, yeah, when Brian Daboll's up in Josh Allen's face, that's where he's supposed to be.
And we'll get another look at that this week once they get to the OTA sessions. I look forward to that. I wouldn't worry about it too much just yet. I don't think it's
– No, I think it's early in the game for that, no question. And I do – and I agree with you. Nate Peterman is not off the radar of anybody in the building. I think he's in the mix, and they're going to give him every opportunity to impress this coaching staff and his teammates. And, he's here for a reason, and he stayed here for a reason last year. So, and he got the start last year. Even though it went as bad as it could have gone, he was that guy they chose to take over in that spot for Tyrod Taylor, and it was nobody else. And so I think they like – some things he brings to the table.
There's a call from Mike in Buffalo. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, yes. You know, I want to say I'm happy that we're doing good pits. The man, a new owner, Terry Pegula, doing good with the manager we got. I just want to say, you know, I think we're going to win 9-7, maybe 10-6. It depends on if Josh Allen will start and get used to the players. And no injuries, no bad calling. Hopefully Brady will be maybe 2 years he'll be retired, so we don't have to worry about him.
Let's make it 1 year for Brady. thanks for calling, Mike. Yeah, we'll see. I don't want to overstate it. I know Brady's great, all-time great, but I don't want to go back over this. We had an interesting tweet on Brady, though. I'm trying to find here, Steve, because this is the other extreme from what I was saying. Here is it. Nick Blake tweets in, New England is finished. The dynasty is done. New England will not make the playoffs this year. Buffalo will win the East title. I'm not there yet, but yeah, that's... I appreciate the sentiment. let's go to the tweet sheet. First of all, let's go to our Twitter poll. What's the most competitive position battle for the Buffalo Bills offense? We've got time to talk about this. Do it on the phone if you like, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Most of you think quarterback. Predictably, most people look at the quarterback, 56%. 20% say wide receiver. 20% say offensive line. 4% say something else. What are some of the tweets saying that are coming in, Steve?
Yeah, some of this is from Vince Guarino. While the O-line competition looks to be a battle, the pieces that they've added to the wide receiver group will be equally, if not more, intense battle because of the nature of the position. They want the glory of making big plays. Hashtag divas. Sorry, Steve. LOL. Yeah, he's making fun of the wide receivers. He thinks it's going to be intense because those guys want to get on the field and play and make big plays. And absolutely, that's no question about it. And another one from Rob Speedel. It has to be the offensive line, because if our quarterback is on his back by the time the wide receivers get separation, we're going to lead the league in three and outs. Which, yeah, it's all tied together, no question about it. But I don't know that the quarterback spot isn't, even if it is an all-out battle for the number one, which it probably is going to be. It's going to be A.J. McCarron and Nate Peterman and Josh Allen. It's going to be the best guy standing. But I think when you talk about that, there's one spot, three guys. You talk about wide receivers, they got like 12 guys, or six or seven or eight guys. And there's got to be maybe – we've mentioned eight that are real legitimate possibilities because they're either a draft pick or have the physical abilities to do it.
Looking at the depth chart now, 13 names under wide receiver. They'll only keep, five or six, right?
Yeah.
Calvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, and then I'm just naming names here because I think those two are, I don't know if they're locks, but you can probably guarantee they would be here. And then who? You know, so you need three more names, four more names out of this group. Andre Holmes, here last year. Jeremy Curley, been around the league a little bit. Rod Streeter, solid training camp a year ago. The rookies, Ray McLeod, Austin Prohl. The undrafted rookies, Cam Phillips, Robert Foster. Street free agent, Quan Bray. Another free agent, Kalen Clay. Brandon Riley, here last year, mostly on the practice squad. Spent the last few weeks on the active, the 53. You know, it's hard out of that group of, what, 11 to pick three or four names, I think.
You're probably going to have five on active roster and on game day, and that's if one of them is a return guy or a special teams guy. And you might have six on the roster on the 53.
Right.
So you're cutting that number that you just said in half.
So 11, you need – half of them.
Five, yeah. Or six, five and a half, yeah. Right?
So who? I don't know. Yeah. Rod Streeter. I mean, Rod Streeter had a solid camp. It started here, right. OTAs and minicamp last year, and then he took it into training camp as well. Now, is he 100% healthy? We don't know. We haven't seen him. But I think he's a guy to keep an eye on because of his camp last year was so solid, and he's got NFL experience.
Well, yeah, and they've got – and also when you get into that spot where it's behind Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Brandon Riley – Andre Holmes or, you know, whoever, it's going to be come down to their ability to cover kicks and or return kicks or cover kickoffs or return kickoffs, and it's going to be about special teams and their ability to contribute different ways. So that puts Rod Streeter right in the middle of that because he's a really good special teams player. So
what do you think? Most competitive position, a tweet on the tweet sheet from Trust the Process in Buffalo. He says quarterback is the obvious answer, but I'm hoping for A.J. or Nate to win so Allen can sit. We don't need E.J. 2.0 where he's forced to start sooner than they wanted. I think O-line is the most competitive since they will help shape quarterback play. Let's talk about the offensive line. See, we've talked a lot about receivers. Who comes back to start? I think Deion Dawkins, second-year guy, is probably a starter, right, at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Left guard, who are we looking at here?
John Miller, probably.
John Miller.
Because you'd think maybe perhaps Vlad Dukas, who started right tackle with John – or left guard last year, might move to right guard – or I'm sorry. John Miller might move into left guard where he switched back and forth with the other guard of Vlad Dukas last year, the right guard spot.
There's also Wyatt Teller, fifth-round pick to think about. There's also Ryan Groy, who has played center and at guard. Vlad Dukas, so that's up in the air. Center, Bodine is a candidate, I would think. Ryan Groy is a candidate, one of those two. Right guard, you mentioned Dukas. Wyatt Teller might wind up there. Right tackle, Jordan Mills, the incumbent. Who do we have? Somebody, was it McDermott the other day, talking about how Jordan Mills had a pretty decent year? I think maybe yeah. Not an opinion shared by many observers, but he thought Jordan Mills was decent last year. You know who I would not overlook either? A waiver pickup a year ago from New England, Connor McDermott, who has sort of remade his body, and might have something to say about it. At the very least, I think he's going to be a good backup at the tackle spot. And I skipped right over Marshall Newhouse, who I also think is going to have something to say about the tackle position. He might be a starter somewhere.
You've got the wild cards like, you know, Gerhard DeBeer, the huge guy from Europe. You've got DeAndre Wesley, you've got Josh James, Mo Porter. I mean, you've got a lot of guys in the mix at tackle, and they're all going to have a chance to compete. And I think one of them, I think the biggest wild card there is DeBeer. He's got the size and strength and athleticism, but you have to wonder if he's going to be able to learn the techniques fast enough to land a spot. And certainly, he could. You know, he could end up being on the practice squad, but you're talking about having a guy step in. You want him to play.
Yeah. From the tweet sheet from Bills and Mets fan, says, I voted line because right now it's more important to have that line as solid as possible no matter who the quarterback will be. Plus, there's five guys that have to mesh together. It's a more difficult process, but you know that around here we trust the process. Good one. Yeah, offensive line. Now, when you look at it, Steve, it's probably equally as competitive as the receiver spot, really, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's five spots here.
There's five spots available. That's the thing. And they're going to have – there'll be eight guys active on game day. They'll have a swing guy, which will be either tackle, and then they'll have a swing guy that play guard center. And that'll be the eight. It'll be the five starters and three guys that back them up. And then they'll have maybe as many as one or two more than that,
yeah.
maybe one more guy on the active roster. The others are going to be on the developmental squad, and that's all you get. That's all there is.
Wyatt Teller, I think, has something to say about the interior spots, guard in particular.
He certainly is strong enough to be in there and move some bodies, and that's really what you look at from a guard spot. You have to, because you get these big defensive linemen, defensive tackles like a Kyle Williams all of these, just the huge behemoths you get in there, it's hard to move them because they're genetically different. I mean, they're big, huge human beings, and you got to push them against their will. And you get a guy like Starlo Tulele on in there, and
Wyatt Teller on the show?
He was on live Friday, the first day of minicamp, and he's huge. I mean, these guys are huge. So, and he was the strongest kid at the draft combine. So, yeah. He's going to be able to move guys around, but will he? You know, will he translate to being a pro football player? We'll see. Certainly he's got the physical body to do it.
We'll talk more about this, the most competitive position battle on the Buffalo offense. We'll take your phone calls on that. Steve and I also want to talk about the owners' meetings. There's a lot on the agenda there, including sports gambling. The commissioner issued a statement today to Congress on what the league is looking for in sports gambling. Plus, NFL true or false. All of that coming up when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker and John Murphy. We're about to talk about something that's happened in the league this week that happens every year, like everything happens every year in the NFL, is the owners' meetings.
That's the lifeblood of our show, Steve.
It really is. I mean, it's a 12-month league, and now we're covering the NFL owners' meetings. And this year, they should be something other than, I called them early in the show, a snooze fest, because they're talking about, you know, television rights and all that stuff. But this time, the agenda includes some pretty interesting topics. One, obviously, they've reimagined the kickoff in the league, in the game. They're going to look at that. They're probably going to rubber stamp that. That's probably going to go through as easy as anything in this meeting is.
Can I ask you one thing?
Yeah, go
ahead.
You
were there at the meetings in New York a couple weeks ago, and the way it's been portrayed now, and I want just to get your take on it since you were there, is that a group, and it says right here in the CSBN copy, largely authored by a group of nine special teams coaches.
Yep.
So are you telling me that these nine special teams coaches came up with this plan and it was adopted at your meetings? Is that how it went down? Were there any changes? Anybody say, no, coaches, let's not do that?
No. Yeah, I mean, they came up with it. They had been on conference calls talking about possibilities because, let's face it, these special teams coaches, they were making some pretty drastic proposals because they wanted to save their jobs.
Yeah, they're the most at stake.
Yeah, they've got the most at stake. So you're going to have to change it and keep it in the game. So they really took it to heart. And it's interesting, and we had Judy Batista on yesterday from NFL.com, and she agreed that the proposals that the special teams, those nine special teams coaches proposed to the league, brought to the league, completely correlated with the data that the Next Gen Stats had told the league was happening to these players. So the on-field experts who watched film and coached it up kind of knew intuitively what the problems were, and they laid some groundwork in to fix that, and it coincided exactly with what the data told the league. And so and they were under orders that, listen, you're going to fix it or it's going to go away. So they were under the gun to get it done.
Sure.
And they did, and I was, and the league, I think, did the right thing in putting it in the hands of guys who study it and know it better than anybody. So yeah, that's exactly right.
It's a difficult question. It may be a difficult question for you to answer. What do you think, and I mean this in all sincerity, it's not a wise guy question, what do you think you brought to that process, like historical perspective?
I talk too much.
No.
But
we all know that.
No, I mean, because
I'll tell
you. But what
do you think you brought to the perspective?
No, just legitimacy. Discussion. I mean, no question. It was just me. I was sitting there. There was a couple other guys. Antoine Randall-El was sitting, one of the great return guys, was sitting next to me. He had a vested interest in seeing it done, and a lot of the players around the table were the same thing. And what we did was we questioned not only, you know, why they, you know, some of the stuff they came up with was like, I was like, wait a minute, you know, like they were going to have this, if the ball landed, the bounce wasn't going to count, or if the ball landed in the field of play. And one of the things that they had talked a lot about at the meeting was not in this proposal, and that was the Iron Cross signal. It's not in the proposal. So it's going to be up to the return man to either pick it up and bring it out or down it, catch it and down it. And
so what did you bring to the discussion?
Not really anything, I don't
think.
Come on. I was worthless.
What did they ask you? They must have said, well, Steve, what did you find when you were playing, right?
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, listen, we told them, a couple of guys chimed in and said, listen, unless you blow it dead quickly, I'm lighting somebody up.
You said that?
Yeah. It wasn't just me either. I said, we're looking for spots like that. It's like Lorenzo Alexander. Right. He said it on our thing. Listen, guys are looking for that. They're trying to send a message. And the coaches acknowledge it. They go, yeah, because it helps you in another play and later in the game. So I don't know that but here's the thing. They really didn't need me there. They and I was sending in, on the run-up, I was sending in suggestions that I'd gotten from fans that I thought were good and a lot of things. So I had added some stuff maybe beforehand that maybe helped them sift through the garbage. But other than that, the meeting was run by pros, and I was pretty impressed, although I probably did talk too much. I know. Anyway, so they're going to reimagine the kickoff, and I think that's going to be a rubber stamp. And I think one other aspect or one other agenda item for the NFL owners meeting that's also going to be okay, you just kind of wave, all in favor, everybody raise their hand, is going to be the Carolina Panthers sale.
Yeah.
They chose the owner, David Tepper. It's an all-cash deal.
I mean, they're all pre-screened.
He's already been a minority owner in the National Football League. They know him. He knows the league. That's a no-brainer. In fact, he wasn't even the highest bidder, and he's the one they chose. So that's going to go very fast as well.
This one's interesting to me. The expanded replay and the way this happened, I find interesting. So when we talked to Lorenzo about it, we talked about it about a month ago.
Right.
Where was it? Is the earlier spring meetings, I guess it was, when they talked about helmet hits and how there was a potential for ejecting players with a helmet hit. But now, after discussion over the last several weeks, the league's competition committee argued for an automatic replay review of any ejection to make sure it was merited. So that's different, and I guess I like it, although you don't want extended replay review, and it won't be a challenge. But if they're ready to throw somebody out, I guess to me this looks like a reactionary move. Because of the helmet hits, many people, including our friend Lorenzo, said, well, that's crazy. You know, you can't eject me for hitting somebody with a helmet right away. And so backing off that a little bit, it looks like the league said, well, we'll review it. And now anytime, it appears the proposal is anytime there's going to be an ejection, they review it on replay, which makes sense.
I like it.
I worry about it.
And I don't know what the officials will say, but that's the crux of it right there is how it's going to be officiated. Because to me, if they're going to get reviewed and the officials don't mind having it reviewed, they'll call the guy ejected to be on the safe side, and then the league will come back and say, no, he can stay in. So the guy – but so it's, you get the benefit of having it called as an ejection, so the players get the message, and they got lucky enough to have it reviewed, and the guy doesn't get ejected. So I think that's and if you understand what I mean, it's a way for the official to send a message without having the player having to be ejected. He can eject him, and if the ejection stands up, then he did the right thing. But if he didn't, he still sent a message to the player that he's watching, and you got to watch it. So I think that's good.
Not a bad team.
The only problem is it's going to take 10 minutes, or whatever. It's going to be a delay of game.
Anthem policy. We're still there, and I don't see a solution here. They're probably going to discuss it, though. In fact, Judy Batista told us last Friday they certainly are going to discuss it. They talked about it last March, a couple of months ago, on if they should have a policy that covers anthems. The current rule says players should stand during the anthem, but are not required to. I don't know if I can detect the sentiment in the league to finding the right way out of this, Steve, finding the right way to handle this.
They're in a tough spot because certainly they don't want to infringe on their players' rights to express their opinions. Given the fact that it's such a public way to do so, they kind of have to trust the players to handle it, in a way that is respectful. But that there's no question there was an outcry and an outrage on certain levels when Colin Kaepernick did it. So they feel like they got to address it somehow. But how do you address it? You can't preemptively blow it up and say there's no way you can do that. If you do, you're out of the league. They did it. And yet Colin Kaepernick is out of the league.
Yeah.
That's
really the heart of the problem now, right? Kaepernick and Eric Reed?
Maybe.
I mean, and I don't see a solution to that coming up.
I don't either, because there's, and I don't even think that the owners don't care one way or the other. All they care about is what the fans, what would the fans say? If the guy can help us, I don't know. If the fans don't like it, though, what are we gaining? And that's
That's a tough one.
I don't know what's going to come out of that. And it may be like the gambling thing, which we'll talk about in a minute. Leave it up to each team, like leave it up to the states. The federal government say leave it up to the states to gamble on sports, and the legal say leave it up to each team to handle the anthem problem.
To me,
problem. That's
a problem, too.
I think it is.
We'll see what they have. Gambling. All right. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling, as Steve said, each state can decide now how to handle sports books, sports betting. Today, Commissioner Goodell issued a statement. It says, as it was for my predecessors, there is no greater priority for me as the commissioner of the NFL than protecting the integrity of our sport. With that in mind, the commissioner had four issues. He said, we're asking Congress to enact uniform standards for states that choose to legalize sports betting that include, as a minimum, four core principles. So the league is looking for a federal-wide consensus.
They're asking for it,
yeah. They want Congress
to
enact.
That's all they can do.
There must be substantial consumer protections. All right, can't argue with that. Two, sports leagues can protect our content and intellectual property from those who attempt to steal or misuse it. We'll get back to that in a minute. Three, fans will have access to official, reliable league data. And four, law enforcement will have the resources, monitoring, and enforcement tools necessary to protect our fans and penalize bad actors here at home and abroad. Okay, back to two. Sports leagues can protect our content and intellectual property. Is he setting the stage for what they talk about as the integrity fee, like the league, the NFL, reserving its right to collect money from these sports books?
Well,
could be.
Yeah, but the integrity fee is based on the sports books having a relationship with the league. Now, you may say that, hey, you and I are sitting here in Buffalo and we want to bet on a game that takes place on the West Coast. Why do we have to pay them anything for a game that happens on the West Coast because we're here in Buffalo and we're not going to affect it or whatever, whatever? Well, here's the problem, and because on the scale that we're talking about, a sports book will take action on a game. And for those of you who don't follow this, I hope I get this right, and if you guys can tweet us and make sure I get this right. Here's the problem. So a sports league, they have these games, and they have no integrity fee at all. They have no relationship with the sports book at all. Sports book goes out and puts, like, the Buffalo Bills at 200-1 or 1,000-1 to win the Super Bowl. And the league sees that. One of its owners, through it, whatever, they start betting that heavy on 1,000-1, and then they just make it happen. Or if you have a single game where it's 50-1 that the Patriots are going to beat the Eagles in whatever game, the league has the capacity, theoretically, I'm just saying theoretically, to fix a game. And so they could put that sports book out of commission themselves unless they have a relationship with that sports book. So that's why there's an integrity fee, so that the league says, okay, we're going to let you do it and we're going to keep it on the high and mighty. We don't care what you do, but you got to pay us not to take advantage of our ability to win money in your sports book.
Really? The league would – am I getting you right? No, the league would threaten to
I'm just saying it's possible.
See, I look at this –
listen, hey, Murph, what do you think? You think it's not in boxing?
I'm not talking about boxing.
Right, but it's the same concept.
Yeah.
Even though it's a huge scale and there's 4,000 people,
that's
the
integrity fee
idea.
From the NFL, from the NHL, from whoever, NBA, it's a cash grab. It's like, what? You're going to make
– of course it's a cash grab.
Millions of dollars of money off our game and we don't see anything? Come on. That's what it is.
That's
they
right.
call it the integrity fee, but it's really like, you know, there's millions of dollars at stake here.
That's right.
They will position it as what you say. Well, we'll make sure these games are on the up and up.
That's correct.
Yeah, they will say
so that. We won't let our people – within our organization take advantage around the back way to make bets at your sport book having information that's not of you, not available to the public.
Right. Information. That's also a part of a thing.
That's
I don't
correct.
Think there's not going to be a vote on this. I would anticipate this week at the owners meeting, but you better believe they're going to talk about it a lot.
There's a plan.
A lot.
This right here, this gambling thing, this is the meat and potatoes of these meetings.
Yeah.
All that other stuff about kickoff, about the Carolina Panthers ownership and the replay, expanded replay, and
because they know this is money. Yeah.
This is money. Big money.
Yeah.
And this is a bunch of guys who know what to do with it. So yeah, this is going to be more than just a rubber stamp. They're going to lay out a plan, I would imagine, and have the owners discuss it. I'll bet they lay out a couple of options.
I'm guessing, and we may hear about it, we may not, but I'm guessing they'll have people come in and talk to the owners like, hey, here's the landscape, here's what might happen, here's what Congress is thinking, here's what the states, you know, they'll go through all 50 states.
Yeah.
You know, this state, Delaware thinks this, New Hampshire thinks this, you know what I mean? And lay out the landscape.
Yeah.
But there, I can't believe a week after the Supreme Court decision there's any chance that the league will have a plan.
Well,
in fact, the commissioner's statement, his 4 points for legalizing sports betting, what he wants Congress to do, that's about as much as the league can do right now, right? Owners or the commissioner.
Right.
Just to give Congress some guide, like here's what we're thinking.
This
is what we're willing to do, including, number two there, including protecting their ability to cash in on a little bit. Leagues can protect our content and intellectual property from those who attempt to steal or misuse it.
Exactly. And the second, before he gets into the 4 points, he says, we have spent considerable time planning for the potential of broadly legalized sports gambling and are prepared to address these changes in a thoughtful and comprehensive way, including substantial education and compliance trainings for our clubs, players, employees, and partners. This isn't catching them unaware.
Right. But now it's serious with the ruling.
But now they got to cut. They got to fish.
You're talking about
fish or cut bait.
A year from now, they'll have a plan in place, I would think.
And right? Think about Murph, and you know this as well.
Maybe
as
later
I do.
This year.
You don't think Shad Khan, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, views this in a completely different way than Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys? I mean, both of these guys are going to say, listen, I got a plan for my stadium. You know Jerry does. Yeah. I mean, he's going to have voting windows in every one of those $400,000 suites he's selling the field level.
They'll start pulling seats out to put more betting
windows
in. They will. There's
yeah,
more
they
money
will.
To be made.
Are you kidding me?
Having a betting window.
He's got like 3 acres of flat ground at each end of that stadium. Inside the building,
yeah,
that's going to be.
They'll pull out some of those cars that are parked in there, those showroom cars, and put up betting windows.
Yeah, they're going to have prop bets. It's going to be Calcutta's going.
Yeah.
There's going to be rolling numbers.
Yeah, roulette wheels.
It's going to be like the train station in Calcutta, you know. Yeah, and you know we laugh about it, but it is all these guys are going to have their own kind of thing. They're all talking their own game too about their own stadiums, their own infrastructure, their own ability, and their own state laws. And listen, let's face it. Each owner, like the Buffalo Bills and the Pagula and Sports Entertainment, they have the ear and they also have the pulse of the local government. They have a relationship because there's all this stuff going on with the big, massive infrastructure that is dedicated to this. They have conversations with the local government constantly. Same thing in Dallas.
Yeah, these other
same thing in Florida. Yeah. Same thing. Oh, they are already probably guys. Some of these guys, like Jerry, like Robert Kraft, like the California guys, they're all Stan Kroenke. They are all Mark Davis in Las Vegas. You don't think they're having conversations with the local government about exactly what they're going to do?
If you were an NFL owner. And let's just
think. I mean, these are outside the owner's meetings
but
I'm talking about.
If you were an NFL owner and this issue is in front of you, how could you not start thinking about, wait a minute, why would I let this private company, third-party company, take bets on my product? I'm going to be the house on my product, right? Why would you let anybody else have a piece of that? Why would you?
You wouldn't.
That'll come
opinion,
up this week.
In my opinion.
I know. That's the way these guys think. All right. A break here. We're back with more One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker on Buffalo Bills Radio. You've learned, we have a recap for you. What did we learn from today's show? It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Robert Foster in here in studio in the first hour. He's a wide receiver, an undrafted rookie free agent, wide receiver from Alabama. Very fast, 4.41 on the combine 40-yard dash, third best speed at the combine. We asked Robert Foster about being an undrafted free agent and choosing to come here to Buffalo to try to win a job. Here's what he said.
Why I mean, it didn't matter to me, to be honest with you. At the end of the day, you get drafted like Coach Daboll said. You know, all the coaches basically say, you know, regardless of what round you get drafted, you still got a clean slate. And I'm taking advantage of it. You know what I mean? I just wanted to make an impact on somebody's team.
Robert Foster had a lot of interesting things to say. Pretty good candidate for a roster spot, you would think. Steve Fairchild joined us also on the show today, former offensive coordinator for the Bills, former head coach at Colorado State, did extensive draft study for a couple of websites and was very high on Josh Allen. He had the Buffalo Bills first-round pick as his number one quarterback in the 2018 draft. Here's what he said to us.
Well, I had a chance to work with Josh before, and I just think he is an elite talent. I don't think you have guys coming out every year that can, you know, do the things he can do that will translate into being an NFL quarterback. I just, when I watched him play and had a chance to go back and review his tape, he was the number one quarterback in my mind coming out, and I just think it was a steal for the Buffalo Bills to get him where they did.
Steal, according to Steve Fairchild. What does it say, Steve? We've heard more good things about Josh Allen since the Bills chose him in the draft than before the draft.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that in most teams, you know, there's no buyer's remorse right now.
No.
And I think
they're
still
in the league.
Right, yeah. Right. I think every team likes the guy they got, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how they all pan out. But, yeah, I mean, because I think nobody wanted to go there when they didn't know where the guy was going to be. Nobody wanted to talk him up like that. And they run up to the draft, let's face it, it was all about their faults and problems because you had to compare them to each other and which one would you take. Well, it came down to the point where the guy you got, and then you start talking about him now that you know where they're at, now you start talking good about him. Say, well, here's what you can expect. Even Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, all those guys. It's going to be interesting to see how they pan out. But, yeah, no buyer's remorse yet.
Nope.
I think everybody's the tone has changed for everybody.
I want to thank our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back on the air tomorrow at 12 noon with One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health. From One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.